like to convene the finance committee. We don't have a quorum present yet, but I think we'll begin the testimony because we have an ambitious agenda today. We're going to be meeting this morning, and then we'll be meeting later today after the session. We'll announce the exact time that that'll take place. Vice Chair Benson and I were observing that most of the people that had arrived here at this point and on time have a teaching background, you know, and we always had to be there when the kids came to class, right? So, yes, and another teacher arrived, so, or former, current, I'm not sure what.
Start on time, we'll be here on time, let's go lock and load.
Well, we're starting.
Oh, let's go.
So, we'll get started with Representative Mahoney.
That would be too, but
we were commenting that the teachers were the better group in arriving on time. But we do have, I did check to see if Representative Szymanski was a teacher, and you have a farm background, if I recall, right? Okay. So, but there were some others. We should compliment some of the others, but the majority of the folks that arrived did have an education background.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just did want to tell you that there were some building trades people that were here on time also.
Okay.
No.
Including the chief author of the first bill. We'll take care of, at some point when the quorum is up, the officially convening the meeting, but in the interest of time, Representative Mahoney, what we'll do is ask you to present the bill. Obviously, we can't take any amendments until we have a quorum. If we are still short of a quorum and you're done, we'll just temporarily lay it over. So, Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair, why could we take up 1081 then? Because there's no amendments to that, and just take a moment or two.
Well, you got them. They're both the first two. If you'd prefer to take 1081,
there's no amendments
fine.
To it, and I can explain the bill and you can lay it over, and you can still pick it up any other time. Members, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House File 1081 is the Small Business Growth Acceleration Program. I suspect you have the overview in front of you. It's a appropriation of $3 million to Enterprise Minnesota, Inc., which is pretty much a low-cost consultant to small businesses in the state of Minnesota, and I will get to the size of the businesses in a minute, that helps them become more efficient, a better business with efficiencies, green technologies, better technologies, training their employees to be more just the word is efficient. I keep using that word. The other part of the bill makes a change to the number of employees needed, and that is in Section 2. In Section 1, it allows the companies with fewer than 250 employees. Section 2 lays out the cost changes to companies. Companies with fewer than 50 employees must contribute $1 for every $3 of assistance. Companies with 50 to 100 employees must be a one-to-one match, and 101 to 250 employees must contribute $3 for every dollar. We heard testimony in two other committees. This program is so important that these business owners drove up not once but twice and sang the praises of this particular company. And it is everywhere from Mankato and all along Highway 169 up to Grand Rapids and up into the Northeast. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would like this bill to get onto the general register for passage.
Okay, and are there questions of Representative Mahoney? We still don't have a quorum, so what we'll do, as soon as we finish questions, just lay it over temporarily. Representative Tolbert?
Mr. Chair, the appropriation for this is being carried where?
In the Chairman Rukavina's Jobs and Economic Development Bill.
So, Mr. Chair, this is a the policy of that then? In effect, some of the changes in the policies?
This is changes in the policies, sir.
Any other discussion? get in there, Rep. Mahoney. I'll just lay this over until we have a quorum. Rep. Mahoney, if you want to begin the discussion in the 927.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. House Bill 927 is the construction code and licensing from the Department of Labor and Industry. 99% of it is the department's bill. There are a couple of pieces in it. I'm not sure exactly how far you want me to explain the policy, but there is an amendment to it. The cost in here is in Section 8, the medical gas. It requires a licensing and certification for installation, maintenance, and repair of medical gases. One of the concerns that they had was that there really wasn't any control over who was doing it. And the other part of the problem was that there was concerns or questions as to who was supposed to inspect it once it was put in the medical gases. So that's why it came here and it's going underneath the plumbing board. There's a $30, I think it's a $30 license for the medical gases, for certification, it's not a license. It is the ability, the department is now going to a 2-year collection cycle, so we've left the ability for them to move this into a 2-year, a 2-year license at $60 if they so choose. Mr. Chair and members, there is an amendment to this particular bill. As with some bills, we have consternation amongst advocates for both sides. I will start on the, I'll explain the A5 amendment.
And then Representative House has that amendment as well, as I understand it. So why don't you, Connie, but we can't adopt your amendment yet. We're still 3 or 4 short.
Mr. Chair, and the amendment starts on page 6, and it is a process of negotiations and trying to make people a little bit more comfortable with it, advocates on both sides. What this amendment does is on page 6, line 14, it inserts the new language: the certification must be renewed annually for as long as the certificate is, holder engages in the installation. Failure to renew the med gas and vacuum system within 12 months forfeits the licensure, which is pretty much standard for most licenses. On page 6, line 15, it deletes the word temporary. So now we don't have temporary exemptions, we have permanent ones, and kind of goes to, I'm tired of having to bring bills back every year and deal with extensions and loopholes. Page 6, line 19, deletes and the new language on line 1.9, it deletes A and inserts the, so it's more of a grammatical thing. The rest of it is deleting language that kind of is redundant and goes back to the temporary. So that's what we were doing in the med gases, which, as I say, had to be negotiated between a couple of advocacy groups and myself, and get everybody as that old line, peace in the valley. On page 6, line 31, is the reason this bill was coming to finance, which is the $30 med gas certification. And again, I explained that prior to that. That's that part of the amendment. On the A5 amendment, starting at line 1.17, which deals with water conditioning, again, we had some comfort language for people who are a bit concerned, and we are defining what multifamily housing means and including it in the water conditioning part of this. There was some consternation about whether this would include cooling towers and big boilers and a variety of other things. And this really is what was brought to me, the water conditioning part was brought to me by, or the department, by the industry, the home and residential water conditioning industry. And one of the advocates thought that it might be a backdoor entrance into other kinds of work that they are not really licensed or qualified for. There is new language starting at on line 1.20 on the A5 amendment. That's just language continuing on after the subdivision 2A, and it inserts multi-family housing. And that takes care of the water conditioning part of this amendment. On page 2 of the A5 amendment, starting at line 2.4, this is pretty much new language being inserted into this bill. The custodians of the school districts across the state came to me wanting to do more training on boiler operations. The school boards were a bit concerned that it might cost money. In connection with the boiler inspectors at the state, as we try to get better maintenance and control systems on our boilers in our schools, they wanted to train the custodians because they end up doing some of the control system, manipulating the control systems. And we're looking for them to do more as we go into the future. What this does is it requires 8 hours of training for these custodians, not new hours, just in their 2,000 whatever hours that they typically work during the year. Some of this training will be provided by the boiler inspectors that are state employees, and one of the requirements for a master's license as a boiler operator is that you have to train people. So you have to have a master's license in almost every school to do that particular training. Every school district has to have it. So it really is 8 hours worth of training in the boiler room. In the education bill, we allowed for 2 years to prove whether this costs money or doesn't cost money, an opportunity or a way for the school districts to pay for this training if it does cost any money. The custodians say no, school board said yes. We gave them 2 years to prove one way or the other, Mr. Chair and the members. So it will come back in 2 years to take that provision out or take this provision out. And that's what this particular amendment does.
Okay, we do have a quorum, and I think what we'll do, Representative Mahoney, even though you've already presented 1081, we'll just finish up 927, being that we're in the middle of it. Representative Rukavina, would you care to move the division report?
Sure, I'll move that 921 be recommended to pass and read it first.
927?
Away from me.
Okay, that's right. There's no division report on this one. It's just a motion to send it to away from me. We have Representative Biskins, are you on the author's amendment?
Yes, I am.
Okay. The chair will move amendment A5. It's already been presented to Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, this is just a expression of consternation that I will have to you, Mr. Chair. You've been very good throughout this session and bills coming before this committee. And
what am I doing wrong now?
Nothing at all, Mr. Chairman. However, I do want to express discomfort I have with substantive policy amendments coming before this finance committee. We have the committees where these issues can be fully aired, debate by the public on both sides, knowing that the issues that concern their industry are coming before them. And here on this bill, and I see on a couple of others, we do have substantive policy issues coming before the committee. So, Mr. Chair, I do have a question of the author of the amendment, or actually of the chair of the author of the bill. Representative Mahoney, were these issues vetted in your committee, And if so, what did the committee intentionally choose not to include these issues, or why are they coming before us now in the Finance Committee?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dixon, I'll start from the back and move forward. The boiler provision has been vetted through my committee, through the Policy and Finance Division of the Higher Ed and Workforce Committee. It has been vetted through the Education Committee, Education Finance Committee. And sometimes the best way to bring these bills forward is to find a common ground with people. And we had to work long into the session here at this particular point to get both sides to agree to the language. And that's why that provision is here. But it has been vetted through three different committees. Let me get to the amendment so I can start with that. Multifamily, the part with the water conditioning, all of the water conditioning parts to it have been vetted through not just my committee, but a couple of others. And this last piece, the adding the multifamily, staff and lawyers for really both sides said that multifamily did not really need to be put in, but it made a group of concerned groups more comfortable to have it better defined. So that particular language has not been vetted through committees, but I did talk with staff. I talked with semi-disinterested third parties. The medical certification, most all of that has gone through. I think it went through the Health and Human Services Policy Division. It went through my committee. And I can't remember if it was heard in Representative Rucavina's committee. But some of these, it was brought to our attention on the medical gas that there's no real reason to have temporary. If we're going to do this, let's just do this. And the fire departments and the plumbing board were both fine with this. The department had worked through this also.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, on each of these issues, there seems to be two sides as you're working together to bring these together. A question that I have is the bill leaving your committee, each side probably knew where they stood. And now we come to this committee and things are changing. Each side of each of these issues alerted to this amendment coming forward? And then to you, Mr. Chair, are we going to allow extensive public testimony when you do have policy amendments rather than finance issues coming forward?
Representative Biskins, when the author is done presenting the bill, being that this was not in the vision, it's my intent to ask if there's anybody in the audience that would like to comment. As you know, we normally don't take testimony per se, but we have people available for questions in the full Finance Committee, but that's when a bill has been in the vision. So this particular one is not. So we'll be asking that question as soon as the author is done. Any other discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I did ask Representative Mahoney if both of the advocates and opponents of each of these issues have been alerted to the potential of this amendment coming forward in this committee.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vistens, yes, and I believe almost all of them are here. I think there might be one that is not, but that was one that had gone over this particular amendment, I think.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Rudd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mahoney, I'm just reading on line 1.12 through 1.16 of your amendment. And I'm just wondering if there might be a way to clean up this language. The reason I'm concerned about this is that it says failure to renew the system certificate within 12 months after expiration date will result in permanent forfeiture. So if I am a journeyman plumber and I choose to take a couple years off to raise my children, I haven't renewed my certificate because I'm planning to take a couple years off. Does that mean I can't work again, is my question. I'm just trying to figure out how it impacts somebody who voluntarily just says, I'm going to take a couple years off, I'm not going to renew my certificate, but I plan to go back to work after whatever it is time frame that I'm taking off. Does this impact them, or am I reading it wrong?
Mr. Chair?
Press them on.
It's relatively standard with these type of licenses. My license as a high pressure steam pipe fitter. If I fail to renew my license in a certain time frame, I have to sit for the test again. And I would rather there's many things in life I would rather do than have to take that test again. Believe me, because it took me 8 hours the first time. It's kind of the hammer that says you need to keep your license up.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I appreciate it. I hate taking those tests too. But this language, the way it's written, I guess maybe you need to define failure a little bit better. Because if somebody's just choosing to take a couple years off to raise a child or something like that, it seems like they shouldn't be permanently not able to work in that line of work that they maybe did before. And so I think the way the language is written right now, while I appreciate what you're trying to do to encourage them to keep their license up, if it seems to me that this permanent expulsion from that line of work is a bit punitive.
Mr. Chair, I don't have the exact language that is in play in force for the plumbers, the pipe fitters, the electricians. I believe this is pretty much standard, and if you fail to renew your license, you have to retake the test. But Mr. Chair, if I may, John Schultz with the electricians is here from the electrical board. If I may ask him to come down and tell me if this is the correct, the similar language as the electricians. And if it is, Mr. Chair and Representative Broad, what it is you have to retake the test.
Right. Mr. Chairman, I don't have any problem if that's what the language does. I agree that you should have to be up to par on the issues if you take 2 years, 5 years off. But what I read the language to say is that you're permanently done, and that's the piece, because I agree with you on the test piece of it. I think that's appropriate.
And Mr. Chair, that's fine. And again, I would. It's been pretty standard practice for the 75 years that there's been licensing on, at least in my field, that if you don't get your license renewed in your time frame, and it's you have like 30 days or 1 year after. I think it's 30 days before the fine kicks in and 1 year before you have to retake the test. But if I may call Mr. Schultz down to see if this is the same language.
He's standing right there. Mr. Schultz, do you want to clarify? While he's coming forward, just to remind members now, and it kind of goes back to what, at least in part, what Representative Diskins was asking about when he was here, and that's that this bill was before us. And it was re-referred over to the Government Operations Committee and then re-referred back. However, the amendment was not before us before, so that's probably where we should, in the interest of time, focus most of our discussion. Mr. Schultz.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Schultz. I'm the Assistant Director within the Construction Codes and Licensing Division of the Department of Labor and Industry. The language is intended to be consistent with other licensing and certification language, wherein if the holder of that certificate or license fails to maintain their license or certification within the typical term of that certificate, that they forfeit that and must, in effect, recertify, re-examine, and that's the intent of this particular language. It's not to preclude someone from their regaining the certification or licensure. It's simply intended to say if you don't maintain it, you're going to lose it, and then you must recertify.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Scholl, then, what is permanent? And this isn't jeopardy, I'm sorry. What is permanent, then?
Well, I think permanent is that particular certification is lost. Then you must regain the certification in order to, and when I say regain, recertify, in effect, a different certification. It's not that particular certification. You can't continue to use that certification that you've gained.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Scholl, then I think we need to amend this a little bit to make it more clear. I appreciate that you're trying to align things. I agree with the idea that they have to be recertified or retake the test, but this is a permanent prohibition. So if you say that certification might be permanently forfeited, then that's fine, but the certification implies that any time they come back and want to certify, they're done. So, Mr. Chairman, I would move on lines 1.2 to delete the word the and insert the word that. Is that right? 1.6. Yes, that's right. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, on 1.6, delete the word the and insert the word that. And, Mr. Chairman, what that will do is make it clear that we're talking about one specific certification rather than a permanent prohibition on an individual.
Representative Mahoney or Mr. Scholl, care to
Mr. Chair, I believe it has a it's fine with the with me.
So you'll incorporate
I'll
that
incorporate
in your
that.
Amendment. Okay. Representative Paul.
I have a question to ask.
Okay. Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. We now have amendment number 6 by Representative Hollis.
Mr. Chairman, I have to make a very small correction to the amendment.
Okay.
On line 2, delete section, the number 9, and the word and insert after line 6. So it should read, page 7, after line 6, insert. And I would incorporate that if I could.
Does everybody... I think we're going to, so we're sure to have it up here. Could you repeat that?
It should read, line 2 on the amendment should read, page 7, after line 6, insert.
Okay, and that was the total of the amendment?
That was it.
Okay, everybody have it then? Okay, Representative House moves the amendment A6, and we'll just incorporate that change then in the amendment.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members,
Representative House.
What this amendment does is a few years ago when Representative Mahoney passed the bill that dealt with the restricted plumber license, there was a certain time frame where people could go and get their restricted plumber license. Now, there's argument amongst folks that some thought everyone was notified, others thought not everyone was notified. I've discussed this with Representative Mahoney at length, ad nauseum, and we have made the time between October 1st and October 15th of this year that if you fail to get it, here's your last and only chance to go in and apply and get the restricted plumber's license.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Mahoney, care to comment?
It's like Groundhog Day, I guess,
so part of the discussion. So.
It is, like I say, like Groundhog Day. And I think I said this on the floor that this is going to come back to haunt me, and it has. I would expect, I will accept this amendment if Representative Hawes will... House will agree
to co-sponsor an amendment that requires after this, everyone has to go to the plumbing board so it doesn't come back here. I don't have to deal with it anymore. We'll just do it on the floor. You and I can stand up and say, sing the praises of the plumbing board.
We can hug?
I'm not sure where. We've got the amendment before us. I don't know if the side negotiations are probably what we're
talking about. I will accept the amendment. I will accept the amendment.
You'll accept the amendment. Okay, any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We now have House File 927 before us as amended, and I think Representative Cole had a question.
Well, prior to that, did we vote on the A5 amendment?
Yeah, we voted on it. Yeah.
Okay. Make sure.
Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, I guess I'm going to ask a question about an amendment that's not here that I thought was maybe coming. And so, first of all, thank you for... I had heard some rumblings that there might be an amendment related to the building code more generically. And maybe that was bad information that I got, but I'm curious, Representative Mahoney, we're not going to be surprised on the floor, are we, with a substantive amendment related to the building code more generically? This is the bill that we're moving forward with. We're doing our work in committee, is that right?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, other than the amendment that I hopefully don't have to hug for,
I hope you don't hug.
I don't expect any other amendments to this particular bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Mahoney.
Any further discussion then on the bill? Seeing none, then all those in favor of motion by Representative Rukavina that House File 927, the second engrossment, be recommended as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Mahoney, well, now we'll take 1081, and for those that arrived late, Representative Mahoney has already presented the bill, but we unfortunately didn't have a quorum. So maybe just a sentence or two just to bring the late arrivals up to date about what the bill is about, and then we'll take any discussion on it and take the motion.
Mr. Chair, is the bill before? I mean,
this one.
Because we didn't have a quorum. Do you want me to move the higher ed and workforce?
Yeah, we need to adopt.
Yeah,
we need to adopt the division report. That's correct.
I'll move that.
Okay, Representative Rukavina moves the higher education and workforce development policy and finance division report for House File 1081, the first engrossment. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Rukavina?
I don't know. Mr. Chair?
We need to move the bill. I thought you might want to move the bill.
Well, then I'll move that. This would be recommended pass and re-refer to the floor.
All right, sir. Okay, that motion is before us. And now I'll be presented it, that we could just put quickly what the bill is about.
The penny tour, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is a bill for a small business growth acceleration program, or otherwise known as Enterprise Minnesota. It's an appropriation of $3 million in the bill. Representative Rukavina is carrying $750,000 in his bill for this. It changes the policy in terms of how many employees a company can have, and the actual dollar figures, or the match to the dollar figures that they have to have via the number of employees.
Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Eakin is next. Thank you, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you.
Okay.
Representative
Benson.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division report for the House File 1237, the first committee engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carried. Representative Benson.
Mr. Chairman, I move House File 1237, the first committee engrossment, to be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us, and Representative Egan, if you'd care to explain the bill.
Sure, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is the DNR and Bowser technical bill and the policy bill. There is one finance component that would pertain to this committee, and that would be on page 5, subdivision 17, it's line 5.15, where it says a state park permit is not required and a fee may not be charged for vehicles transporting K-12 students engaged in school district sanctioned activities. So this would be a cost of about $5,000 to the state parks fund, and that, again, is the reason that this bill is before us today.
Okay, any discussion on the bill? Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Egan, who is C.J. Ramstead?
Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin, I'm not very familiar with C.J. Ramstead myself. I know that he was an avid outdoorsman who had a magazine that was published that dealt with ATV trails, and he was an avid outdoorsman, not just with motorized vehicles, but also hiking and biking, and he was killed recently in a car accident along with his son. And this is actually a provision that was put into the bill by Representative Dill and Representative Hackmarth. Both were interested in having this placed in there to rename the North Shore Trail the C.J. Ramstead Trail. And just to be clear on what that did, it doesn't refer to the hiking trail, which is right on the North Shore. This is an ATV trail, which is set back further from the North Shore, that is being named the C.J. Ramstead Trail.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Egan. Thanks for clarifying. I wanted to make sure that he was indeed dead and not living, as we're apparently not naming things after living people anymore. So thanks for that clarification.
Representative Hausman on this point.
Yes, but Mr. Chair, I do hope that we, as a legislative body, establish some criteria when we do this. We're renaming the North Shore Trail to some sort of memorial trail based on what, I don't know, whether we have criteria. Do certain people who've been in the right circles of sports have their names memorialized forever? I mean, I have to tell you, I'm growing increasingly frustrated by a few people who have some connections and get their name written into law. I find myself quite annoyed by this direction.
Is that, did you want a response from the author?
For the record.
Okay, and Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, question to you as your service in the Education Policy Committee. So on page 5, lines 15 through 17, Mr. Chair, in your experience, if the use of the phrase school district, would that bar private school field trips to state parks, would they still be required to have the permit? I don't know, and I don't think it Representative Egan meant to do that. However, that may be some verbiage he needs to look at and clarify.
Representative Biskin, what line was that again?
5.16.
5.16.
It says vehicles transporting K-12 students engaged in school district sanctioned activities. So I'm wondering then if private school field trips would then need a state permit because of the use of the verbiage school district.
Representative Egan. Mr. Chair and Representative Biskin, I think that's a very good point, and I'd be willing to strike district. I think that would take care of the problem.
Mr. Chair, I'll make that motion.
Okay, Representative Biskins moves in on page 5, line point 516. We strike the word district at the end of that line. Everybody see that? Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Tiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
On line 520, where it has the state voter wayside, because I'm familiar with a lot of public access, and many of them have little picnic tables or little sanitary facilities, sometimes water and so on. So what is a voter wayside? Is this something totally brand new? Could you just explain that a little bit more? And how would you choose where to establish them?
It is different, and I do have with me Bob Meyer, who can explain more of the details about what a voter wayside is.
Mr. Chair, members of the Representative, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. Representative Kitzmeyer, what we're trying to do here is establish these areas actually as a unit of the Outdoor Recreation Act, which is in Chapter 86A. You're absolutely right. Some of our boat marina dock areas do have these types of facilities. This is going to be like an island, perhaps, or Zippel Bay. If you've ever been on Lake Littlewood, Zippel Bay has kind of what we're looking to do is establish an area in a large water body, perhaps on Mille Lacs somewhere, or Rainy Lake, or Leech Lake, where there's an island, or we would acquire land where actually someone could go and use it as a day-use area, perhaps. There may be camping involved, there may not be, but we don't have an official category for these, so we're trying to establish them as a unit of the Outdoor Recreation Act so we can more formalize their position within the recreation system throughout the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I would rather see you come with a little bit more of a plan than to say you can do it and we kind of don't know what or where. So it just seems that we're kind of getting a little backwards here, unless there's some authorization you need to even do that.
Mr. Chair, members, we do have a plan. I don't have that with me right now. I can certainly give you what we're looking to do. This just allows us to actually officialize what they are. We can then develop rules for what these units would be, what can and can't be done, so to speak, through our other authorities that we have within the Outdoor Recreation Act. So it's not like we're trying to just willy-nilly do this. We do have some plans, some ideas. We've established some of these already, but they aren't official voter waysides, so we're just trying to memorialize that fact as we move forward.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would appreciate seeing more information on that if you could. Thank you.
Representative Grayling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move to strike the new language on line 3.25. I agree with the arguments presented by Representative Houseman. And if this were a small little thing, but this is, by my reading, it's the entire North Shore. And I just find that amazing that we would name that after someone no one has ever, none of us have ever heard of, except for a couple. So that's my motion, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Everybody, follow it's on page 3 then, line 25, you're striking the C.J. Ramstead Memorial and reinserting them North Shore, so it would read the North Shore Trail shall originate.
That's right, Mr. Chairman. Perhaps I have to strike that whole section.
No, you don't want to do that.
No, okay.
You just need to strike the new language.
Mr. Chair, I would ask for some help from staff because Representative Houseman is also pointing out that this is just on 20.7 as well. So I'd like to get my amendment in order with the help of Ms. Novak.
Okay, why don't we... are those the only two places that the name of the new trail or the name of the trail name change takes place?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that's correct, but the amendment on page 20 would be to delete section 43.
Okay, so we delete section 43 on page 20, and we delete the naming on, was that again, page 6? Page 3? Line 25, okay.
Let's sit there.
Representative Grayling makes the motion. Does everybody have the motion then? Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know who the person is, but maybe Representative Eastick can tell us, was this brought forward by the people of that area?
on behalf of us, or what's the deal here?
Representative Aiken.
Mr. Chair and Representative Rucavina, it was actually a suggestion made by the United Snowmobile Association, and I would speak against the amendment, partly because the North Shore Trail isn't right on the North Shore. That's actually a hiking trail, and that's called the Gipsy Gammy Trail. There are several trails there. This is a trail that's actually set back further from the North Shore, so it's kind of a misnomer to refer to it as the North Shore Trail because it's not right on the North Shore of Lake Superior. And again, the C.J. Ramstead, it came from an individual who's not just involved in motorized activities, but was also involved in other outdoor activities as well. So I speak against the amendment.
We have several people, but did that answer your question? We have Representative Biskins. Okay, we have Representative Hackbart.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This was a bill that I had that Representative Ethan was kind enough to put in the bill. The North Shore Trail, members, is a trail that is miles, literally miles off the North Shore. There's a number of biking trails and hiking trails that are very, very close to Lake Superior and along the North Shore. But this trail is not. This is a state trail. The state trail, snowmobile trail. State snowmobile trail built by the state of Minnesota and was called the North Shore Trail. And we wanted to rename the trail C.J. Ramstead Memorial Trail. C.J. Ramstead was very, very involved in early snowmobiling and ATVing and things like that. He was a publisher, a reporter, did all kinds of different outdoor activities with his son, motorcycle racing and things like that. And we just thought the North Shore Trail, it's not really next to the North Shore. It is a motorized trail, and we thought that this might be a more appropriate name for this trail. And C.J. Ramstead and his son were killed in a car accident near their home a couple of years ago over outside Minnetonka, and we just thought this would be a nice fit.
Okay, we have Representative Tamar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to support the amendment. I've been all my life. I've been going up to the North Shore. It's the most one of the most special places I can think of in the world. And I just think, well, the Boundary Waters, when I get you to be my Sherpa up there, it's better too, but that's... But I just find this when we... I understand why we want to memorialize the roads or trails, but I find that, personally, I find this confusing, and I think it confuses the tourist industry and people who are coming to the North Shore who are spellbound by it. I've hiked on this trail. I mean, you know, does it really matter to me in some ways? No. I mean, it's still beautiful. But I just think it detracts from what we're trying to present on the North Shore. And, you know, whether it's Taconite Trail, I mean, it's historical. It's the North Shore. It's Lake Superior. It's Gitche Gumee. It's not C.J. Ramstead, whoever that is, who might deserve some honors or something to some effect. But I tire of doing this, even with some of our roads around the state. I think Representative Leader has made a good argument about not plastering new signs up all over the place. I think there's ways to honor people who have been helpful to the North Shore, but not in this way.
Mr. Chair, to that point, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Tamar. That is one of the reasons we are changing it, because it is confusing. This North Shore Trail is not anywhere near the North Shore Drive or Lake Superior. And you can hike on it. It's a multi-use trail, but it was built as a snowmobile trail, a state snowmobile trail. It's multi-use. You can ride horses on it. You can hike on it. You can bike on it. There's nothing paved on this trail. It's a very, very rustic trail. And it is literally miles. There's places where it's 3 miles from the shore, and there's places that it's as far away as 10 miles from the shore. But that's why, one of the reasons we're taking it, because it is confusing. It's confusing with the other trails that are very, very close to the North Shore Drive and the Lake Superior. People think the North Shore Trail is one of those hiking trails that runs very, very close to the North Shore Drive, and it's not.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman and members, I don't think the issue of proximity makes much sense.
I grew up being taken for hikes on the Appalachian Trail, and I did it in New York and Connecticut and Massachusetts and Maine, nowhere near the Appalachians, and that's the most famous trail in the country. And so, you know, I think it was, what the nice appropriate thing might be to name a wayside after this person, but a whole trail.
Representative Hoffman.
I do just want to emphasize to people, this goes from Duluth to the international boundary. This is not a little segment. This is the trail. And my point is, there are surely thousands of Minnesotans who are worthy of honor. Thousands. And what I'm saying is, before we continue down this trail that we've been on the last couple of years, we've got to stop and think about criteria. What are the criteria that when we would do this? And to do it frivolously like this, where one person has a good idea and we affirm it, I think just dishonors all those other thousands. And I
among the two.
Okay,
any further discussion on the amendment? Representative Hackburn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't think that's quite fair, Representative Halston. This was not done frivolously. This has been talked about in a number of different committees as this has been going through the process. This isn't something that came out of the air. The Minnesota Snowmobile Association came, MinUSA came forward with this, and a lot of folks have been talking about this. This was not something that was just done on the fly.
Mr. Chairman, I'd ask for a roll call.
Okay, roll call has been requested. Any further discussion? Representative Aiken, before the vote, do you have any further comments?
Again, I would just encourage a no vote on the amendment.
Okay, we'll begin the roll call.
Benson?
Aye. Hamilton? Fry?
Gibson? No.
Campion?
Yes.
Raffle? Riley?
Yes.
Hackforth?
No.
Hausman?
Yes.
Hilty?
Yes.
Hausman? Yes. Huntley? Donkey?
No.
Kahn?
Yes.
Kiffmeyer?
No.
Knuth?
Yes.
Kohl?
No.
Benchowski?
Yes.
Murphy? Tamar?
Yes.
Kowalski?
No.
Pepin?
No.
Rukavina?
No.
Szymanski?
No.
Simon? Flawless?
Yeah.
Smith? Solberg? Thiessen? Virginia? Winkler?
Yes.
Carlson?
Yes.
Solberg?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, House will vote no.
House votes no.
Mr. Chairman, Pepin will vote no.
Anyone else before we announce the total?
This is gender thing?
Motion carries on a vote of 11 to 10. Any further discussion then on the bill?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Rukavina.
Sir, I'm my libertarian streak is coming on. I mean, I want to know. How Section 15 is going to be enforced, you know. I mean, Mr. Myers, first of all, I've never seen I don't know what a law enforcement watercraft is. Maybe they're down here in the cities, but what's the penalty if you're 140 feet and you didn't pace it off on the water before you
kicked her up again. What's the penalty going to be?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to bring down Colonel Conrad to help answer.
Oh, we got a colonel. Oh, boy. Okay. Now I'm worried. I guess that can either be a name or a title, but welcome.
Mr.
If you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Jim Conrad, Director of Enforcement, DNR.
Did you hear the question?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative. The penalty would be a misdemeanor, which is the standard violation. But as far as measuring off the 140 feet, pretty tough thing to do on water. We already have provisions for 150 feet for passing other watercraft when it comes to personal watercraft and docks and swimming areas as well. So that's a standard measurement that our officers are pretty lenient in measuring. We don't cut the corners when it comes to 140 feet or 139. Where we write those tickets is when it's a clear violation. If those guys came by and splashed us with water, I think we'd write that ticket.
I just didn't say that. Representative Rufino. Well, sure, anytime I see something like this in law, I just wonder how it's enforced, number one. I don't know. Colonel, what are the conservation officers doing on the lake with their emergency lights activated?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it would be any kind of boating and fishing enforcement. In many cases where they would have lights activated, it would be in response to a dangerous situation, reckless operation of a watercraft, or possibly a an arrest of a drunk watercraft operator.
Yeah. Representative Rufino Smith.
No, I just love the police station.
Representative Smollett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question, and places like Kinney Connect and so forth, it's not as a boater. It can't be 150 feet as a stretch there. And then what about light? Is it lights during the day as well?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not familiar with the Kinnikinnick. On any kind of, I would guess that on rivers that there would be some issues with passing. However, if you go minimum wake, low wake, it wouldn't matter how close you pass to them. Okay. As long as you were within 150 feet of them, you would have to be in that minimum wake mode. So regardless of how narrow the waterway is, if you pass within that 150-foot limit, that would just mean you slow down and you go by cautiously.
Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colonel, what's the genesis for this? Why do we need this?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it comes from not only the Department of Natural Resources, but Sheriff's Water Patrols. I particularly am familiar with this from the Lake Minnetonka aspect. I worked 22 years on Lake Minnetonka, and with big cruisers and all that sort of traffic that we had on weekends and nights on that lake, many times you were nearly swamped by a big cruiser going by while you were trying to check a fishing license or deal with a drunken boater or whatever. So that's the genesis of it. With the advent of the move-over provisions for law enforcement on roadways, we thought that this would be analogous to that situation.
Representative Bowles, okay. Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then Representative Benson renews this motion that House File 1237, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Kahn?
One more question, and that's on this issue, Section 3, the prohibition on youthful operators. Could you tell me how an adult supervisor accompanies somebody if they're not riding the same kind of vehicle that they're riding?
Okay, and Mr. Chair and Representative Kahn, if you could repeat that again on Section 3, you were talking
about. Section 3, you've taken off the fact that the accompanier has to be on another off-highway motorcycle.
Representative Hackbarth.
I understand the participating in an event. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you accompany someone if you're not on the same kind of vehicle?
To that point, Mr. Chairman, at these events, we're just saying that you don't have to be with the youth on a motorcycle. If it's a motorcycle event, they could be on an ATV. If it's some other kind of a means of transportation to be with them, it doesn't just have to be a off-road motorcycle.
Well, the point is,
that's done.
I understand that for events, that's fine. But how do you accompany someone crossing, operating it? I mean, there's a lot of activity going on, not just crossing a highway in an event. Mm-hmm. How do you accompany them if you're not on the same kind of vehicle?
You don't get it.
Representative,
we had extensive testimony in Representative Eakin's committee, and a lot of these are in little circular tracks. And so a company means you can sit in your lawn chair and watch your kid go around the track if he's underage. That's fine.
Right. You know, all of that is
well,
really
let's go through the chair. Representative, were you done?
Yeah.
Representative.
Mr. Chairman, that's fine if that's what it says, but it doesn't say that. It says that the person can be go anywhere. They can operate it on public lands or waters. Now we used to say that they had to be accompanied, so I'd understand someone going with their family on it. But I don't understand how you can accompany. I understand those circumstances, and I have no problem. But that's not what the change says. The chain says they just have to be accompanied by another person with a valid driver's license. And I don't understand how you accompany someone under all these circumstances if you're not riding the same kind of vehicle.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative
Kahn, if they could do it on an ATV if the child is on a motorcycle, for instance, it's not vehicle specific here. And I think that would answer the question.
Representative
Khan. The problem is I just don't understand how it typically works. How can you, how can you accompany someone on that kind of ride if you're not on a very similar vehicle?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Khan, I mean, if it can't be done, then they're not accompanying and it's not allowed.
Mr. Myers, you came forward. I think you're going to offer some advice or...
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Junkie was that we had a lot of discussion on this in all the other committees, and the restriction that we're moving is specifically for the off-highway motorcycle requirement. So we feel that providing that accompanied requirement meets those demands rather than have to require somebody to be on an off-highway motorcycle if your child is at an enduro race, for example. It's most times not even physically possible to do that. So we're trying to remove this barrier. It was brought forth by the user groups, and the department felt it was adequate, provided an adequate safety level still while meeting our requirements of the accompanied and being in maintaining that watchful oversight authority.
Matt, would you explain how Section E would work?
Mr. Chair, did you say reference to letter E?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, once again, this person would need to be on a similar type of motorized vehicle, being an off-highway motorcycle, an ATV would be about the only two things that you could be on, or else a bicycle maybe, but I mean you have to be with the person, and that's our whole premise for these sections.
And Mr. Chair, you certainly can ride an ATV and accompany a child on a motorcycle. You don't need to have the specifically same exact kind of vehicle in order to accompany the child.
My name is Ray Bone. I represent the Amp Riders Motorcycles in Minnesota. Relating specifically to subdivision E there,
occasionally you will have a trail, it's a designated trail, that will go out into a right-of-way for usually short distances to connect with another trail, and that's what that's specifically addressing. Off-highway vehicles, off-highway motorcycles, are not allowed on right-of-ways like ATVs. So that's specifically relating to trail riding. And again, the main purpose we're doing this is that a lot of parents would prefer to ride an ATV rather than ride an off-highway motorcycle when they're trail riding. And this, if they go out as a family, this allows the kids to ride the smaller bike, but the parents can accompany on an ATV. And we have had instances where they've been stopped by conservation officers, and that was pointed out. I don't know if it's been tickets specifically, but the conservation officers indicated that they're supposed to be on an off-highway motorcycle. Now, the key in all this is the word accompany. That's defined in the statute. You do have to be, you know, there supervising the kid. You cannot just let him on an off-highway motorcycle and just let him watch him ride over the horizon. You have to be there with him in close proximity. And then the other issue is for example, in the Gilbert Park, we have a facility up there, a small racetrack, where the kids, actually more of a training track, where we allow the kids to go on there and ride. And as Representative Dunkey said, legally, the parent would have to be there sitting on basically an off-highway motorcycle watching their kids be legal. So what we're trying to do is just give a little flexibility here, but without lessening the safety issues or the supervision issues.
Representative Dunkey.
The company has been sitting in there Twitter connection?
No, it does not.
Okay. Where does it say that it doesn't mean that?
Well, the definition of the company in the statute, I don't have that right with me, but I can certainly provide that to you.
Representative
Conway, Stephen Mark. Puzzling to me is how you operate a motorcycle on public waters, and if you go with an emergency vehicle 150-foot fast, do you slow down and you drown? Because I don't know. Or do you get a ticket? How do you operate a motorcycle on public waters?
The winner.
When 20 below zero outside and lakes are frozen. We actually do have some events out on lakes, and I think they do that.
I thought they had water wings.
Okay, well, Representative Anderson renews his motion, and the motion is that they'll be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We're now down to Representative Hillstrom. And by the way, members, when we kind of structured this, my intent was to take up this morning the non-controversial bills and reserve for after session the more controversial, but I guess we're just off to that kind of start today. Representative
Huntley here?
No.
Okay, Representative Benson.
Mr. Chair, I move the House and Human Services Finance Division report for House File 818, the first committee enforcement.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor? It's like we're just putting the bill, adopting the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Benson?
Chairman, I move House File 818, the first committee engrossment, to be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
Okay, that motion is before us. President Kiffmeyer, did you have a question before we have the author present the bill?
No. If we can just let the author present, then I'll.
Yeah, okay. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill really doesn't need to be here anymore. We stripped out anything that cost any money. So, but we did that in a finance committee. So this is a a group project, the Vulnerable Adults Justice Project, got together, and more than 52 agencies and entities got together to put this together. More than 50 to 60 individuals participated in each of the 8 stakeholder group meetings. 10 subcommittees divided the work on specific topics. And more than 323 individuals across Minnesota participated in the 39-question online survey. Members, this really is putting Minnesota in a place to deal with vulnerable adults, mostly who are financially exploited. This will improve our ability to identify, investigate, and prosecute criminal cases with enhanced penalties for convicted perpetrators, and again, we have taken out the state fiscal cost. Mr. Chair, I can go into much more detail if you'd like, but given that it doesn't cost any money, I'm trying to be brief.
Yes, Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 6, under criminal penalties, I think one of the questions, and I was kind of looking through this, is, you know, if they've taken money, and maybe your group dealt with this already, maybe it's covered in some respect, but the question I have is there any restitution for the vulnerable adults? In other words, if things financially have been taken from them, I see a criminal penalty, imprisonment, and so on and so forth in the file. But what about restitution to the vulnerable adults? Is there some mechanism in here? I just couldn't see it, or did you address it?
Representative Holstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We actually do create a private right of action against the perpetrator for vulnerable adult victims of financial exploitation to recover the damages in this bill. And Mr. Chair, any time you are charged with a crime, the court can order restitution. So that is already in current law.
Yeah, I think I know you can, but I think in these situations, just as you have done all these things, we want to expedite everything. And if it is included already, that any recovery goes to the person, that we can build that in whenever possible.
Mr. Chair, we do create the private right of action. And
what section?
Section 16, subdivision 20.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative House. Representative Tiffany, you were done.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hilstrom, I haven't had a chance to leaf through your book, or your maybe it'll be a book someday. No, your bill, and I'm not familiar with the definition of a vulnerable adult. Could a vulnerable adult also be, say, an 82-year-old widow who was sold a bill of goods by somebody and tried to cancel, and they wouldn't let them cancel, and the legislature and the Department of Commerce and Department of Labor had to come down on that individual and force him to change his mind? Would that be a vulnerable adult?
Representative Holstrom.
Okay, Minnesota law defines the vulnerability of people over age 18 in 2 ways. Categorically, which are people who live in nursing homes and facilities for people with developmental disabilities, and functionally, people who, regardless of service received, are at risk of abuse, neglect, and exploitation because of physical or mental infirmity. Does that help?
It helps. We may have to expand ever so slightly the definition, but I won't do it today.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Elson.
Thank you. Representative House, this has been a working group project. And while I personally may have wanted to accept others' amendments, this really is a census building process, and I've been trying to keep it their work rather than, you know, my work or my personal preference. Lots of people put a lot of time into this, and so anytime folks have had other ideas, I've sent it off to the working group. So if you have something, if you could get it to me so I could get it to the working group, because I really don't want to derail this.
Mr. Chairman, the reason I did it is because, mentioned that, is because Representative Atkins is in the room and Representative Paymar, and I do have an issue that somehow beckons the attorneys to look at it, and I just thought I'd lay my base for future time.
Thank you. The base has been laid already.
Thank you.
Any further discussion on the bill?
It's not there.
Excuse me. Representative Pepin.
Uh,
Paymar. Oh, Representative Paymar, you both had your hand up. But
I'm sorry, go ahead. You go first.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Deezy. Representative Holcomb, I do have something that I would like to discuss with this group, so I'm wondering if you could maybe forward me the contact names of those I could talk to.
Right there.
Why don't you come forward so people can hear the name of the contact person as a part of the record, I guess. Just
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kevin, my name is Iris Freeman, and I'm with the Center for Elder Justice and Policy at William & Social College of Law, serving as the legislative coordinator for the vulnerable law.
Okay, did you get all of that, Representative?
Yep.
Okay, Representative Tamar.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to clarify the felony provision. So, and in the fiscal note, can you just briefly discuss that, Representative Hilston?
Representative Paymar, if you could clarify your question a little bit further.
Representative Paymar.
From reading the fiscal note, I understand there's a felony provision in here, and I just want to know what how you're reading the fiscal note and if there's a bed impact to the bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar, it's my understanding that Mr. Carter came to talk to you about the fiscal note, and there's the potential, this was a couple of weeks ago, when we asked if you needed to come and see you, and there's only the potential. That is correct, Mr. Chairman and Representative Kumar. Because the financial exploitation felony can currently be charged under some sex crimes by Swindle, that by false representation, and those penalties are that high. It was judged that this wouldn't have been foreseeable that impact, but it would make the cases easier to charge.
Mr. Chair, to that point.
Representative Solberg.
Can of 18 in the fiscal
note. No, I'm done. Thank you. Yeah, okay, Representative Solberg.
Well, I think the clarification of that is page 10 of 18, if that's what you're on in the fiscal note. So there's the bold letters that will explain that.
Representative
Chipmark. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I get to revisit my restitution since I have such a wonderful testifier here, Ms. Freeman, and that you maybe might consider the working group also looking at some way. When I think of a vulnerable adult already, having the mental capacity to know this section of law, to know that they have a civil remedy, and then after they've been robbed, have the money to go and get restitution. That seems a big leap, and I'm sure that you have no intention whatsoever. I know it's a group effort, and I really appreciate having that background. That really helps Representative Hilton and helps understand that. But it's also wonderful that you have that group, but you might want to revisit that if there is some recovery along the process here, that there be an immediate restoration without having to go through civil action.
Ms. Raymond.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Kipmeyer, of course we will talk with you more about this, and this is continuing work. But often the restitution is accomplished through less formal means, such as the intervention of the long-term care ombudsman. And any of us, whether Adult Protective Services ombudsman, client advocates, who are involved with that vulnerable adult, is pledged to take every step to do to correct the situation as humanely, quickly, mm-hmm. and without cost as we can.
So, Mr. Chairman, I will take that as a yes. You'll take a look at it and maybe just at least let me know and give me some of those answers. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kipman, indeed, even with the private right of action, there this provision was offered so as to attract private attorneys to take these cases and assist people without upfront costs, because legal services and prosecuting authorities are full up.
Okay, any further discussion? If not, then Representative Benson renews his motion that House File 818, the first committee in Grossman, be recommended to pass and placed in the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
Thank you.
We now have House File 1805. The intent is to adjourn just before a recess, I should say, just before 10 o'clock. My hope is to get Representative Atkins and let's see, we've got three Atkins bills. So Representative Atkins, you're going to have to come back. Representative Gauntwald indicated his was just a very quick one. I've had a couple of others that I was told that earlier today.
I think that's true of mine too, Mr. Chair.
We won't get all three of yours anyway, and we may get revert back to the one that you came forward on, but maybe we can take Representative Gauntwald and... you assured me it's going to be short.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My hope is if the committee cooperates, we should be able to get this one done in a couple of minutes.
We need move? To...
want to move?
Representative Clark here?
No.
Okay, Representative Benson.
Mr. Chairman, I move Housing Policy and Finance and Public Health Finance Division report for House File 2036, the first committee in Grossman.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Benson?
Mr. Chairman, I move House File 2036, the first committee in Grossman, to be recommended to pass and place on general register.
Okay, the motion is before us. If you could explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, this bill creates an Alzheimer's disease working group. I know some people have kind of commented that they don't think this is a very important thing or a very big issue, but there is a tsunami of Alzheimer's cases coming at us over the next 10 to 20 years. If you can imagine the baby boomers aging, the number of people who are older who are going to be in our state, by the age of 65, you've got one in six, I believe, who have Alzheimer's disease. By the time you get to 85, it's one in two. One out of every two people. We've had testimony in other committees, Mr. Chair and members, that this will cost the state, if we're not ready for it, tens of billions of dollars, billions with a B, within the next 10 to 20 years, if we're not ready for it. This Alzheimer's disease working group is set to meet four times publicly and other times as needed until 2011, when it's required in January to present its report to the legislature and the governor's office, at which time it sunsets. Because of the collaboration between the Alzheimer's Association and the Board on Aging, there is no fiscal note to this. A new fiscal note has been presented this morning that has been signed off on by the fiscal note preparers, and it has no cost to the state of Minnesota. It has the potential of saving us millions and millions of dollars if we begin the process that we're way behind in getting ready for the flood of Alzheimer's cases that this state will be facing over the next several years. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I'll stand for questions.
Are there any questions, Representative Biskin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Scott Waltz, is there anything in law which would prevent the creation of this working group absent this statutory language?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskin, nothing that would specifically prevent the group from getting together, but this puts the discipline of this being under the commissioner and the requirement that they report back to the legislature. Our hope is that this results in good, solid, workable ideas for the state of Minnesota to begin getting ready. So we think it's very important that it be where it is and not just simply operating unto itself.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gauwald, does this mean that for future Government Operations Committee meetings, when we have working groups that come forward, that nothing prohibits the creation thereof, you'll stop asking the questions about that of the authors, too?
Representative Gauwald.
Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, I'll always retain the right to ask the questions on both sorts of issues. It's a valid question to ask. It's one I asked when this bill was first brought forward as an idea for me to help carry. But I do think it makes sense for us to keep it under the auspices of the commissioner so that we've got that discipline, because I believe this does need to result in good legislative ideas.
Representative
Mr. Chairman and Representative Gauntwald, there was
a recent article in the New York Times, I think within the last 2 days, about the that there's a lot of misdiagnosis of Alzheimer's, that there's a lot of confusion with just ordinary mental aging. Is there, I don't see anything in this language that kind of recognizes the sense that the epidemic of Alzheimer's that we're seeing may simply be the application of a title incorrectly. Is there any thoughts on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I appreciate the question. I think if you look through what's being asked of this committee and what they're being asked to look at, it includes many issues regarding dementia, specific to Alzheimer's, but I believe this is something that this committee can look at and perhaps address, is how much of this is misdiagnosed, and in any case, how much of this are we going to need to deal with? There are many cases of dementia that require very similar responses. So as we mobilize to help with Alzheimer's cases, we may in fact be helping with those other things. And Mr. Chair, perhaps some of my testifiers would want to comment on that as well.
Representative Kahn, did you want to go beyond that?
I wouldn't mind some concept.
If one of you wants to comment and identify yourself for the record.
Hi, Mary Burchard. I'm the Executive Director of the Alzheimer's Association in Minnesota, North Dakota. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, it is true that it is difficult to diagnose Alzheimer's disease and other dementias at this time. We don't have a single test. We do have a much longer diagnostic process. I think that Representative Kahn is referring to a researcher out of Cleveland who is sort of saying that Alzheimer's now is not a disease, and we actually dispute that claim that he's making. It was in the paper yesterday. But I think the challenge to diagnose the disease earlier, to get services and supports in place so that people can stay out of emergency rooms and long-term care facilities for a longer period of time, is really essential in caring for Alzheimer's disease. And I think the legislation will allow us to look at what options the state has to put supports and those types of things in place. I see it as a cost-saving working group.
And Mr. Chair, I appreciate Representative Kahn signing on to the bill. Thank you.
Representative Fowler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gottwald, I think this is a good bill, and I'm going to support it. I happen to have the autism task force, so going through a similar process. Just two quick questions. Did you think about putting this in the Omnibus Health and Human Services bill, or is it just a deadline issue? And then where's the bill in the Senate?
Representative Gottwald.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Swalwick, the thought did cross my mind. My sense is the bill is doing well independently. Representative Huntley and I have spoken about this with regard to Health and Human Services. On the Senate side, it is at the General Register, so it has passed its committees. It's ready for being heard on the Senate floor there. My hope is that that's where it's headed here as well.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Canoe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Gottwald, you keep talking about the commissioner and that this needs to be more official, and maybe you can help me understand what the Minnesota Board of Aging, how the hierarchy works and how they're related to any department or agency, because you don't actually mention a commissioner in this bill. It's all the Minnesota Board of Aging. So if you could help me understand that, that'd be great.
Mr. Chair, Representative Knuth, if you look at where the report is going when they're done with this, when they do their report back, they're required to report to the governor and the chairs of the ranking minority members, the majority members of the committees. The Board on Aging functions as a subset of the Department of Health, So when I'm speaking of the commissioner, I'm saying it does have, through the Board on Aging, an official tie back to state government. It's not just a private set of organizations thinking things through and then perhaps coming back and commenting. This has an official tie back to the Department of Human Services and to our legislative process through the governor and the chairs of committees. And we think that's a significant difference because it means that the recommendations coming out of this task force, this working group, are going to be put right into what we're talking about here and not just sitting out there waiting for some sort of sponsorship. It may be considered a nuance,
but we think it's an important one. We don't have a lot of time to start getting ready for these things, and they have tremendous implications for our lifestyle, for the lifestyle of the people affected by the disease, for the caregivers, and for the cost to the state budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Working groups exempt from the requirement that we have for similar kind of organizational groups being heard in government operations?
At this point, in fact, I had just written down we're going to have to change the motion that has to go to rules and legislative administration at the time of the session. This does create a tense. So when I restate the motion, we'll include that.
Mr. Chair, does a working group fall under the same heading?
Well, we've got, you can look at the rule. I think I'm going to interpret it that a working group does. Working group task force, I think the intent is that at this point they would go. So any further discussion? Seeing none, then Representative Benson renews his motion that House File 2036, the first committee in Grossman, be recommended by a pass and re-referred to the rules to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members.
Representative Atkins, sorry to have delayed you there, but I think we'll get stated to have three. I had told Representative Gottwalt with his witnesses that I would get to him this morning, and I didn't realize the first bill would take as long as they did. Representative Atkins, we were at House File 1805. That's Representative Tamar.
Mr. Chair, I would move the Public Safety Finance Division report for House File 1805, the first engrossment.
Okay, that motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Tamar.
And Mr. Chair, I'd move House File 1805, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, that motion is before us. There is an amendment by Representative Kahn. Is that putting the bill in the form that you would like? So, Representative Kahn?
I'll move the 0511 amendment.
Okay, that motion is before us. Would you care to just quickly comment on what the amendment is doing?
You have to, so it takes the funds that the firefighters are paying to be licensed, places them in a fund and used for those purposes.
Actually, Representative Atkins didn't read between the lines. It also establishes Sunday liquor sales.
Thank you, Representative.
We've learned that we read the con amendments very carefully. Motion is before us. Any further discussion on the amendment? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Mr. Chairman. Representative, I am just looking at this, and I know that we have some local volunteer firefighters, and while I can see folks wanting...
Representative Meyer, it sounds like you're going in the direction of the bill. We're just adopting the amendments to put the bill and the authors in the shape the authors would like. So any discussion on the amendment? Representative Atkins.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn and Representative Atkins, if you could help me again, what is Section 299N.04?
Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, that's the section that we've established in the bill. Once I go through the bill, I think it might make more sense, and I might even be able to anticipate Representative Kiffmeyer's question as well.
Okay, so any further discussion then on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative.
Mr. Chair, what this bill does very briefly is we license everything from cosmetologists and lawyers and doctors and even dog groomers in Minnesota. This would allow firefighters to be licensed. It was brought to me by the Minnesota Professional Firefighters. Since then, we've also got on board the volunteers and paid on calls. Every firefighting group in Minnesota is good with it. The reason it's before the Finance Committee is because there is a licensing fee. That fee is designed to be used to take care of the needs of the licensing process. And with that, I'd be happy to stand with for any questions.
Okay, Representative Pittmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think from what I see here that we do have a volunteer firefighter stand. Are they then exempted from this fee as volunteers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kipfire, they would not be. They would actually be grandparented in, though, as licensed firefighters, assuming that their chief allows for that and everybody is in before, I believe it's 2011. After that, you'd have to go through certain requirements in order to become licensed, and there is a $75 fee.
Okay, well, Mr. Chairman, I live out in kind of a rural area, and I know many others as well. I just would want to be very careful that we don't hamper the ability to recruit or have people serve, but that's probably addressed. I'll take a look more at this and talk with my local folks to make sure before. Otherwise, I'm not objecting to it, just concerned.
Okay, Representative Vistens, did you still have a question? Okay, Representative Hackbart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And now I'm a little confused, Representative Atkins. You said that volunteers are required to be licensed. In Section 4, there's an area that says optional license for volunteer firefighters. Maybe you can explain what the difference is.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Hackbarth. If I said it that way, I apologize. They have the opportunity to be licensed if they want to, and their chief. And then I went through the process that they would go through. I'm sorry for not being more clear.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Atkins, a volunteer firefighter could apply for a license and be licensed if they so chose.
Absolutely.
But they're not required if they're a volunteer firefighter. Just want to clarify that.
It's in the bill. We've got Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, you may remember from the state government finance bill discussion on the floor that we have established a new e-licensing program with a surcharge on top of license fees, and I'm just suggesting that for the $75 fee, you may want to attach language saying that that includes any surcharge that may be established by the Office of Enterprise Technology or whomever else is supposed to apply the surcharge, so that it's not $75 plus, because then students will come back to us complaining that they're being asked to pay the license fee in increased amount.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, I have some vague recollection of this coming through public safety, and was there at least for part of the hearing. I guess my question, Representative Atkins, I mean, we do license everybody under the sun here in Minnesota, and I guess I'm just, I mean, I know everybody's on board with this, and that's all great, but, you know, we've got a $75 fee now that the city of Waconia that has 40-some volunteer firefighters, they want to license everybody, they're going to have to pay 75 times 40, whatever. I was told there'd be no math, so I'm not exactly sure what that is, but you know, it's another cost, and I guess I'm trying to understand the why of the licensing. I know everybody supports it, but I just have a little bit of a philosophical problem with licensing everybody under the sun when I'm not convinced that there's any benefit that's going to come from it. Is there a problem right now we're trying to fix?
Representative Colton, first I'll address that policy question, but your first point was relative to the fee, and obviously if they're volunteers, it's an optional thing that if they choose to go through, they can. As far as the policy behind it, this isn't just fighting fires anymore. This is first responder. This is collapses, structural issues. This is hazmat. There's all sorts of education and training that goes into this. We licensed our police officers, and as I noted, we licensed a lot of other folks. And the firefighters believe this would be a valuable tool. The Firefighter Training and Education Board, which you oversee it, believes it would be a valuable tool, and I believe it.
Mr. Chair, just a comment. I mean, Representative Atkins, you know, again, everybody's on board. It's all fine and dandy, but I guess I'm not aware of a bunch of situations where we've had unqualified, untrained firefighters showing up at emergencies, whether it's a structural fire, whether it's a medical emergency. And so, you know, I guess I'm not going to make a big deal out of this, but I guess it continues to bother me that we look for new ways to add new licenses and do new things. Everybody's on board with this, that's fine, I guess, but I'm convinced that our firefighters today in the state of Minnesota are doing a hell of a good job without a licensure requirement, and so I'm not sure what we're fixing here by doing this. There's a lobbyist friend of mine sitting in the room here who likes to talk about solutions in the search of a problem, and I'm just not aware of the problem that we're trying to fix here. But Representative Atkins, thanks for your good work on this, and the firefighters are on board with it. I guess I'm not going to oppose it, but it just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me.
Representative Hilty.
I'll pass,
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I have to agree with you on this. Firefighters in the state of Minnesota are certified now, and there's different classifications for the certification and the training that they go through. I think they are pretty well trained and documented that they are certified, or if they're not certified, and they have to go through continual training. But I am going to support the bill, and I everybody's on board with it. I do have one question about the grandfathering in that you talked about. You said they were going to be grandfathered in if they're already firefighters now. They're still going to have to pay the $75, and the volunteers are going to have to request to be licensed. Is that right, Representative Atkins? Even though they're going to be volunteers in, they still have to apply to the board and pay the $75 to be grandfathered in? Or are they automatically grandfathered in and they're going to be sent a license?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hackbarth, there would be the $75 fee, and relative to the concern that the two of you raised, there was considerable testimony in the policy committees as to the reason behind the licensing. And if you want, I can provide another 10 or 15 minutes of testimony relative to that issue that was discussed at length in the policy committees. But as far as the fee, there would be one.
And Mr. Hackbarth. And the volunteers will have to send a letter signed by their chief to the board in order to get that, even though they're going to be grandfathered in.
Correct. Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, there is one sentence in the bill that raises my eyebrows. Representative Hackbarth mentioned already that volunteer firefighters are certified. You have different levels, Firefighter 1, Firefighter 2, etc. Certification and the courses typically, at least when I went through it, were provided by the technical colleges in the area. However, on page 2, line 30, you have a sentence that says the board must appoint an organization that is accredited by the International Fire Service Accreditation Congress to prepare and administer firefighter certification examinations. Representative Atkins, is this going to prevent entities that currently provide Firefighter 1 and Firefighter 2 from continuing to provide that service?
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Representative Biskins, again, there was considerable discussion in the policy committees relative to that issue. It's my understanding that it would not prevent that, and that the Firefighter Training and Education Board would take current training into account. Again, those that are already in the fire service would be grandparented in if they're in before 2011 as well.
Keith. Representative Hackbarth.
One final question, Mr. Chairman, thank you, and Representative Atkins. There's quite a number of firefighters in the state of Minnesota, and it sounds to me like there's going to be a glut of people asking and requiring this license all at one time. Is this going to involve any additional state employees to handle this? Is the board handling it? It's got to cost the money somewhere, somehow. And I know Representative Kahn had her amendment for $75 that's going to appropriate the money out in a certain way through the special account. But how's that all going to happen? Are there going to be more employees that are going to be put on initially, at least, to handle the glut of people requesting the license?
Connections.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hackbarth, there's a fiscal note that's indicated it will be able to be handled within the amount paid. They do expect it. Initially there will be quite a number that will come in, and obviously then after that it'll slow down quite a bit, and so you'll see some initial startup costs and then it goes down dramatically after that, but the expectation is that the fee will more than cover the cost.
Representative Hackbarth.
But, Mr. Chairman, a question about additional employees. Will we need additional employees in Napoli to handle that?
There's, Mr. Chair, Representative Hackbarth in FY11. There's a full-time equivalent of a 0.25 person in FY12, a 0.5 in FY13. It continues at 0.5.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hackbarth, the new e-licensing system, which is a high priority of the governor and which was in the state government finance bill, which you did not support, will take care of this with the 24/7 online service.
Representative Tamer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I should have asked this, I guess, when this came before the Public Safety Committee, but Representative Atkins, you know, this is sort of patterned after the post board for law enforcement, and I'm just wondering about the license renewal. Once you've obtained your license, you know, already paid your fee, but now you have your license renewed after, was it 3 years, I think, then you have to have a certain amount of 72 hours of firefighting training in the previous three-year period. I'm just wondering what financial impact this would be for local fire departments, and I'm just kind of thinking our budget. I know there's a line item for a post board to reimburse law enforcement agencies to send their police officers to get ongoing credits to get their post board certification. So will there, down the line here, if this bill is passed, will there be a cost to the local fire departments? And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Where would that money come from?
Mr. Representative Seymour, that's a great question. The first time it's been posed as we've gone through the process, it's my understanding that 72 hours is that they far exceed over the course of a three-year period, 72 hours. I think many of them probably do that in the course of a single year. But that they're already doing that now, and I don't anticipate that we'll see additional requests or costs associated with that.
So, Mr. Chair, would there be rules at all set up relative to this, or would that be internal training at your fire department suffice?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tamar, there's nothing that requires anything different than what we currently have. It's my understanding, my intent, that the current training that's occurring, which is excellent training, across the various departments will suffice to satisfy that 72-hour training requirement. That said, I don't anticipate tying the hands of future legislatures. God knows what we might do in the future relative to that, but I think the training they receive is excellent right now.
Representative Tamar then renews his motion that House File 1805, the first committee engrossment that you recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the committee on ways and means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
Chair members,
we're going to be recessing, but if people listen carefully, a couple of announcements. But I do want to approve the minutes. Representative Champion, I noticed you've been studying your paperwork down there. Did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
I did, Mr. Chair. And I move that the minutes are approved dated April 23rd, 2009.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. By way of a couple of announcements, we'll probably need about an hour after we conclude the session, but the room that we're in is a bit up in the air. K-12 Finance Conference Committee has reserved this room later in the day. If taxes... was that canceled? So... this room may be available. And taxes is done. Yeah. Well, okay. Watch your emails. We'll clarify. I'd like to be back in this room because it's a larger table for a large committee. But we'll email you, and I'll announce it on the floor. But we will reconvene about 1 hour after. The other thing, staff has asked if you could pull from your file
the bills that we have completed, and that will help them as they kind of reorganize things, especially if we have to move to a different room. But maybe before we pick things up, we can clarify if the room is available. With that, we are in recess. Committee, and when we left off this morning, House File 1511 by Representative Atkins was the next bill up. If there does happen to be anybody in the room for item number 10, House File 103 by Representative Atkins, we'll be laying that one over pending getting future information perhaps on what the fiscal cost may be on that.
Representative Atkins, oh, there he is.
These chairs are sort of high. I didn't see you sitting back there, but at any rate, House File 103 is off the agenda for this evening, and I'll be in contact with Representative Atkins if anything changes on that. Representative Kahn, would you care to make a motion? Division report. Representative Kahn.
Okay. I move the division report on 1511. Is that the one?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, that motion is before us, the division report. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Kahn?
I'll move that 1511, the first committee in gross and be recommended to pass and refer to the committee on ways and means.
Okay, the motion is before us, and we have an author's amendment A7.
Mr. Chair, there is a...
Told by Zornfeld that that one's being replaced by A8.
Correct.
Okay. The Chair will move Amendment H1511A8, and maybe you could comment on the amendment, Representative Atkins.
I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair. It just does. Actually, there's been an agreement by all the parties to all of this, not only the bill but the amendment as well. This language, as I understand it, now matches up with what the Senate has, so that we won't have to make changes on the floor or do much more tinkering with it. What it does is it changes the audit requirements, lifting that from the $300,000 to the $500,000. We can still do them at lower amounts if there are certain conditions, if they've had problems in the past, is the essence of it. And then on the back, it allows for a higher fine. Again, the industry folks are fine with it. If nobody wants the good players, the good actors don't want the bad actors to be giving them all a bad name. So there's a little bit more enforcement, a little bit more muscle in the enforcement that all parties are thinking will be an effective tool in moving charitable gambling forward. The chief reason for the amendment, though, is that it actually reduces some of the expenses for the charities, many of which are struggling quite mightily right now in this economy.
Okay, any discussion? Representative Kahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, can you let me know which organizations are licensed under Chapter 349?
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, I probably can, but just to make sure that I get it exactly right, I do have Tom Barrett here from the department, and I think it'll also be more brief if he does it, because if I explain it, it sometimes takes longer than when he does it.
You can identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Tom Barrett, the Executive Director of the Gambling Control Board. Representative Biskins, in response to yours, the organizations are licensed by the Gambling Control Board. Roughly 27-28% of those are veteran-related. Then you have the fraternals, the moose, a lot of outdoor, Ducks Unlimited, those kinds of organizations.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One other question, and probably to testifier. On page 1, line 20 of the amendment, we have the more blanket. I see the first part is talking about financial audits, but on part 5, failed to otherwise comply with chapters 297E, is that a chapter dealing solely with audits, or are we talking about other provisions besides just audits in this amendment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, 297E relates all to the financial tax reporting for lawful gambling through the Department of Revenue. So if they're late in filing their reports, if they're found to contain errors, that it's at both stages, Department of Revenue could say you need to have a full audit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Gretchen, Atkins, you've got an 8-10 amendment. Is that one to get the bill in the order you want to present it?
Sure.
Okay, the chair will move the 8-10 amendment. Representative Atkins?
Very simply, this is a kind of a belt and suspenders. We want to make sure we didn't get into the actual gambling world of slot machines and so forth. There's a reference to electronic, is it the wheels?
Battle
wheels. I know. Some folks suggest that could be tantamount to a slot machine. And in the world of belts and suspenders, making sure that it ain't, we're just pulling out that section, Mr. Chair.
Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We now have the bill then in the form that the author would like. Representative Atkins, you want to give us an overview of the bill? And
sure, Mr. Chair, there's, quite honestly, there's not a whole lot that I can add to it at this point. We do some fees. We've got some civil penalties, a little more muscle on the enforcement. That's what the purpose of the amendment was. The rest of it is a lot of clarification and a lot of, like I said, just cleanup language. If there's anybody that's got any questions, I'd be happy to either answer them myself or have Mr. Barrett answer them. That's why we're here.
Are there any questions then on the bill? Seeing none, then Representative Kahn renews her motion that House File 1511, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Let's see, we drop down to Representative Bill. House File 1238 is the next one. Members, we did 2036 earlier, and for the late arrivals, 103 was pulled from the agenda or laid over. So, House File 1238 by Representative Dill. And Representative Benson?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division report for the House File 1238, the third committee engrossment.
Okay, any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Benson?
Mr. Chairman, I move House File 1238, the third committee engrossment, to be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Bill, there are several amendments. Do you want to...
Mr. Chairman, do you want me to move A-19?
That's what I was just going to ask. Representative Bill, do you want A-19 adopted now to put the bill in the form that you want?
I'm trying to get organized. Is the A-19, I got...
That was your...
they're all being thrown at
your amendment. That's the one dealing the prohibition of returning right. Certain netted rough fish to
correct.
Water.
Thank you. Yes, I would like to have the A-19 adopted.
Representative Benson.
Mr. Chairman, I move author's amendment A-19.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Also, Ms. Chair, the 546.
May create a little more discussion than simply putting in the bill in the form that you'd like. I think we will take this up with the other amendments after you've presented the bill.
Are you ready for the
you didn't ask how the chair voted this morning.
I know how the chair voted it.
Oh, okay.
That's part of the business of being a legislator, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I was none too happy with that either. So, would you like me to present my bill?
But still be friends.
Oh,
I think.
You know, I don't have.
I wasn't representing Bill alone on that vote, though.
I don't have Iron Range Hall. I haven't been in the Iron Range delegation long enough, Mr. Chair, to have Iron Range Alzheimer's, and that's when you only remember the grudges.
Okay. But you will have an opportunity to present your amendment.
So, Mr. Chair, I just stand for questions from the members, unless you'd like me to give a brief overview of the bill.
I think a brief overview of the bill, especially since there will be amendments to it and what have you.
The bill is what is commonly known as the Game and Fish Bill. Also contained within it is House File 668, which was incorporated at the last stop with Representative Bogenius's committee. And that included the lands provisions, which at this point all of the lands provisions for all of the members in the entire body have been approved by both the committees and the Department of Natural Resources, and maybe more than one or so that has something to do with the Department of Administration. I frankly don't remember if they're in it this year or not. Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't, but primarily DNR. Also in the bill are provisions that relate to, that was House File 1132, that relates to the selling wood as a selling timber, stumpage, as appraised. Currently the department sells 4% of their wood as appraised, and they sell the remaining 96% as harvested. But they do an appraisal in both instances, so that the logger has an idea of what kind of wood is on the sale site. What this does is require that the department increase the number from about 4% up to 10% for sold as appraised, and report back to the appropriate committees in 1 year the results of that. The second part of the bill has to do with leasing of land, state land, to other individuals for management purposes. That would incorporate upon the execution of the lease a long-term forest management plan, a long-term lease, and specific goals and objectives regarding forestry management and outcomes. It would deploy our assets more appropriately on the lands that we could manage more readily, the state-owned land, and allow others who can manage some state-owned land more appropriately, allow them an opportunity. And the where this came from is that there are huge tracts of land up north of Highway 2 predominantly, that have scattered tracts of state land throughout them. And sometimes those are more difficult to manage than other lands that are more contiguous that are owned by the state. And so this is a pilot project, and again, at the end of the period, they would be reporting back to the legislature on the results of this. This is purely a pilot project, and it specifies that in the legislation and in the language. This bill has passed through 6 or 7 committees. They have all been voice votes. And to my knowledge, during all of those voice votes, 2 members have voted no on a particular provision or on the final passage of the bill. Except that you have questions, we have resource people here to help answer some of the questions that may be more technical, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and what I will do, even though I wasn't of your position this morning, being that you're not on the committee, on your behalf, I'll move the 0546 amendment and Representative Dill, if you would explain what the amendment is.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for moving the 546 amendment. The North Shore Snowmobile Trail is a motorized trail, and the proposal is to name the trail after a person who is deceased, and that person is very likely the most famous motorized recreationalist, and possibly some might say in the entire world. He is from Minnesota. He is the author of many books. He is the he was the publisher of many magazines that are circulated around North America and the world. Also, the statewide ATV, snowmobile,
magazine that is sanctioned by ATVAM and also the Minnesota United Snow Dealer Association. He had a particular passion for that area of the state. I had the opportunity to snowmobile with him on quite a number of occasions. This provision is endorsed by the different groups. It has not been controversial in any committee. In fact, I don't even recall that it's been brought up in any committee at all, as I recall. And the person is also been adopted by the state as the spokesperson for motorized recreation. And if you go to exploreminnesota.com and you go to the Minnesota or to the Hall of Fame, Motorized Hall of Fame, you'll find that this deceased person is still the spokesperson on their website for the Explore Minnesota, particularly talking about motorized opportunities within the state of Minnesota. He was killed in a head-on accident on the west side of town. He and his son were both killed in the accident. Another vehicle crossed the center line, hit them head-on, and they died instantly. I was shocked when this amendment was voted off 11 to 10 this morning in committee in the out of Representative Egan's bill.
Okay, the motion is before us, and President Hausman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess to members and the author, I think what we're seeing is a proliferation of things. I know my city has very, very specific requirements. They rarely name things, and it's clear what the city requirements are for ever doing that. I mean, they make an intentional decision. And I would simply suggest, and I don't know what committee does this, but because we're naming highways and trails and on, I think we have to call a halt and say some committee should have the jurisdiction and make some determination what's the criteria. The descriptions you gave could fit thousands of people around Minnesota who are leaders in their fields. And so should we take the street that runs from their home to their office, or should we name the building in which they work? Thousands of people who are world-leading and worthy of honor. It's this kind of rush to naming that you've seen on the House floor this year. You have seen on the House floor. And I would simply suggest that it's already out of hand, and we simply have to say, as a state, what are the criteria? When do we do this?
Maybe I can just comment quickly. I think this morning, as I pointed out earlier, we did have a roll call vote, so I guess everybody knows how everybody voted. I thought a valid point was made that we don't really have any criteria. And that was in no way a reflection on this particular situation. It was, at least in my view, the fact that I think as Representative Hausman just pointed out, probably, I'm not sure which committee that would go into. Whatever the outcome of this is, I think we need to put some criteria in place. I know for the Capitol building in the Capitol area, there is criteria for statues and other memorials. And I remember Joe Mallory had a bill up a few years ago dealing with a well-known woman that was still alive, and he wanted to have it, statue or something, or a plaque, I forget what it was, in her honor. Well, she was still alive, she was 90-some years old. The decision was made in that case, because she was still living, that wouldn't happen. My only point is that there is criteria in that case, and there isn't a criteria here. Now, however the committee decides on this particular issue, we'll decide in a few moments, but I just wanted to make it clear to anyone that was listening to the debate this morning. I thought that was probably the point that was made the strongest, that somehow we should provide a way to provide criteria so that when these situations come up, we can apply that criteria and then see what the names might be for different roads or monuments or whatever. But I'll stop there. The motion is before us, and we've got, oh, Representative Biskins is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. I don't know if there's criteria or not, because each division, each policy committee, you know, they talk about this stuff. And so to make a blanket statement that there's no criteria, there is criteria, maybe there is. Maybe Representative Greiling in K-12 has criteria. I don't know. Right? Maybe there is criteria in Game and Fish. I don't know. But what I do know, Mr. Chair, is that this is the Finance Committee. And with the Finance Committee, I don't think we should be playing with the policies developed in other policy commissions. I don't think we should be bringing substantive policy amendments before the Finance Committee. And without, if it goes on, then the re-referral is automatic back to the policy committees to be fully vetted. So I support, I voted against the amendment this morning because I don't think this is the place to be making those policy decisions. I'll vote for this amendment to put it back in because that's what the policy committee decided. And if there's any other policy amendments coming before the finance committee, Mr. Chair, I'll probably vote against it.
We have Representative Browning next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and Representative Biskins. I'm going to remember that for whenever you might, maybe after tonight, have a different philosophy. It's a different topic. But members, I did, as Representative Dale knows, made the motion this morning based on the same arguments that Representative Hausman made so eloquently just now that she also made this morning. And I do think that the Finance Committee should mainly deal with finances, but I also think that some of the umbrella committees are for taking a look at the sort of evenness that we would like in our bills here that I don't know that always happens in the hustle and bustle of the legislature. Representative Biskins, you know that there isn't a single name of a single person, I defy you to find any, in the education statute. There may be some there, and if anyone would find them, I'm sure it would be you, but I don't know of any. And maybe you do, but let's not get off on that. Talk about that another time. Mr. Chair, you mentioned the argument, another one that I would like to bring forward here tonight, and that is the Capitol grounds and how we have group that looks carefully at what we put on the Capitol grounds. And we all know that when they, before they started looking carefully, there were absolutely, other than Clara Barton, no women in any of the monuments or memorials up until very recently, other than Clara Barton, which is a flat memorial that people stomp over as they walk and don't notice because the grass grows over it. It doesn't stick up, it's just a flat. And that's the only woman that we had mentioned there. And I do think that there's a trend with all the names that I see going through the legislature, and Representative Khan has brought up this issue as well, that without some careful planning and criteria, we seem to have a propensity for naming everything after white men. And I think we should take more care than that. And I, too, do not make any reflection on the, I'm sure, wonderful constituents or wonderful person, whether a constituent or not, that Representative Dale brings forward. Person by person, I'm sure we could name a lot of things after a lot of people, and we could all think of those people. But if we don't plan things out in our state, then I think we come out with inequities, and I don't think, based on who's coming forward with names, that we have any criteria. So I would urge a no vote on this amendment.
Okay, I'm going to recognize a couple of people. We discussed this pretty thoroughly this morning, so I did, on behalf of the officer, want to give him an opportunity to present the case before the committee. That's why I moved it. But I hope we don't need to get too bogged down on this one because we have other bills. Representative Johnson.
Well, just real quickly, there was planning consideration because it did go through the policy committee, which I sit on, and we had a thorough discussion on it, and did go through Representative Lugenius's committee. And, you know, she's a white woman, for what that's worth. But, you know, so there was planning and consideration. I mean, I don't want people to understand that this did go through the process and through the proper committees, and there was some real good discussion and planning on it, and it came through, and as Representative Dill said, there were no votes or movement to remove this or do anything. There was no shady references to anything. So, again, I support Representative Dill. I think it was a mistake to take it out of Eakin's bill this morning, and I think we should move it forward.
Representative Tanya.
Can I ask something about the finances of this issue? Is that all right? I'd like to ask on the second page, the size 12 sign. Is that language strong enough to know to make sure that this is all it's going to be paid for from non-state funds? Yeah. I mean, it seems...
Well, thank you, Ms. Chair. And it's the way the language is written on 2.3 and 2.4, it directs the commissioner to that the marking design of the trail and shall erect the appropriate signs after the commissioner has assured the availability of the funds from non-state sources is sufficient to pay all costs. So that, you know, the commissioner is not going to make this move until the time that he is, what do they say, assured of the availability.
It's kind of funny language for an appropriation of money. I mean, it's usually we have it. We're not assured of the availability.
So, Ms. Chair.
Are we going
to...
This bill doesn't appropriate any money. This bill says that that someone other than the state is going to appropriate money. The state is not appropriating money, and until such time that the commissioner is assured that those appropriations of other people's money, OPM, has been made, that there be no further progress on the bill.
What, Mr. Tim?
I just was informed that this buzzing that we're getting is from some cell phone somewhere in the room, so if you've got one, be sure to turn it off.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm just, what if he's assured of the availability and the funds aren't there? Then what? What is assured of the availability mean?
Mr. Chair, why don't we have Commissioner Meyer come down? He's the deputy commissioner.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Tolbert.
As Chair of Ways and Means, I'm absolutely assured that it's not going to cost any money.
And Ms. Chair,
I will put my salary up on it.
Staff
all $10.
Ms. Chair,
I can't say how much of your salary, but
$10.
Staff tells me, Mr. Chair, that this same language that we use in the MnDOT language as well when we are doing a provision like this. This is the identical language that we use for MnDOT when they're proposing to name something after someone and signs are going to be placed.
Mr. Chair, members to the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. Representative Dill is absolutely right. The way this is going to work is Minnesota United Snowmobile Association is going to be paying for the signs, so we are not going to be purchasing any signs. The state will not be responsible for any of the name change costs associated with this.
Okay, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. We do have some other amendments. Representative Rukavina is here now. The next on my list here, excuse me, is Representative Dunkey.
Representative Dunkey. Thank you. I move the 820 amendment. Members, as you know, in this bill, there's a fee that appropriates over about $2.5 million estimated for the two-line fishing amendment, which is fine. I've talked to a lot of people that support that would also pay the fee for that privilege. I have an amendment to that section, basically asking, and this was a bill that was heard in committee too, for $150,000 each year into the Let's Go Fishing of Minnesota group. And again, members, I'm trying to get this into conference committee. Representative Chaudhry
I talked to him, and he asked me if I could send it over that way into the Senate. And I know Representative Dill is accepting of this, Representative Wagenius and others. This is such a good program. We can't let it drop right now. It's AARP endorsed. It's all over the state. They're to the point of just having a couple more years of funding, and they will be self-sufficient, just like Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, anything else. So, members, I hope you would stick with me in funding this important program. I can go on forever showing you where the chapters are. I have a bill with 35 authors. I could have had more. They're Republicans and Democrats to this funding. And, again, a lot of us have chapters or are getting chapters now. And it's one of the most, if you're not aware, it's one of the most wonderful programs I think we've ever come up with in this state. I wish DNR would just help us adopt it and make it part of them, but I guess it wasn't their idea. So it's, you know, it's always been kind of up to us to keep it going until such time as they're self-sufficient. But they're doing quite well, and with this, hopefully in the next couple of years, they'll be self-sufficient.
So the motion is before us, Representative Dill.
I'm in favor of the amendment, A-20.
Any further discussion? Representative Hagbar.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Dunphy. I do think it's a pretty good program, too, but this program's in trouble, and I think you know that. And I think there's some, I don't know if it's management problems that they're having, that sort of thing. But they have, I think you're aware of this internal audit that the DNR's done. Are you familiar with that?
Well, Mr. Chair, to respond, I got a copy of the audit from Representative Myers, and the first paragraph says there's no more additional audit needed. So it did pass, and I can tell you that this program has also received, just to that point, the...
Mr. Meyer.
Received the Minnesota Charities Review Council meets all standards seal. That was October of 08. So this program is not having any internal financial troubles. This is really, again, to make sure we get these chapters going. It takes personnel. It takes promotion. It takes miles on the road. There's chapters all over the state being asked for. And again, I can read them off if you want. But Representative Hackbar, don't misrepresent it as being some financial problem, because that couldn't be further from the case.
Representative Hackbar.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Duncan, I'm not necessarily saying that there's a financial problem. I think it's a mismanagement problem. Not financial, but mismanagement of the people that are running this program now. If you read further into this, unpaid travel expenses due to the CEO of $45,000 plus, unpaid notes at the bank for $264,000, I think there are some problems, maybe particularly with the CEO of this thing. And I think that we should take a step back from this until we find out what some of these other issues are.
Well, again, Mr. Chair, just to respond, Joe Holm is the CEO, and he's pledged. The reason he got those loans and the other things and the backlog of money is because he's paying it out of his own pocket. That's why we need this to get it, keep it going. And again, within a couple of years, and they've got all the financials, and we can sit down. I'm happy to have him come visit your Representative Hackbarth with his accountant, and they can lay out their plan and how they're going to be self-sufficient in a few years. And again, we're moving these. They're coming into the Twin Cities area now. Again, they're all over the state. For people that are interested, I have maps, and I can show you the program. But they're very sound financially, and that's not a problem.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not sure if Representative Hackbarth has a copy of that audit to hand out to the committee or not, but I would like to speak to several of the items that are in that audit. This is the third biennium this group will receive funding. The first biennium, it was actually vetoed by Governor Pawlenty. It was put back in an education bill as a global negotiation. I believe it was $250,000 a year. Last of general fund. Last biennium, they used heritage dollars. I think it was $175,000 or $200,000 a year. If this appropriation goes through, it'll be almost $1 million of state funds that this group has received. So we thought we needed to make sure we did an audit on it. It does show several things. First, that they are raising almost $750,000 off of charitable gambling proceeds. So there are other funds that they are operating off of. And last time we talked about this last biennium, it was to make sure they were going to do this one more time to get them self-sufficient. So they're working towards that, but they clearly aren't self-sufficient right now. But the one thing is that there are three recommendations on that audit, the back of page, it would be page 2 of the audit document. One is that there needs to be substantial changes in the way this grant is actually managed through the Department of Administration grant management opportunities. Two is that it should be also done under the auspices of the LCCMR grant making procedures manual, perhaps. It needs to have a lot more controls associated. And thirdly, if the legislature is deciding to do this type of activity, they should follow the recommendations of the legislative auditor in a report that they made in 2007 to the legislature, that if grants of these types should be appropriated by the state, they should be funded at a generic level, at a competitive process, rather than earmarking a grant program to one specific entity. So those are the three recommendations that we talked about. The other piece of that document is an email we received from the group that does address Representative Hackworth's question. They appear not to operate with any written contracts. So for an organization that's appropriating about $1 million a year, there's no written contracts anywhere, and that document describes that. And then the last attachment on that document, Mr. Chair members, is a page that I just received from the Game and Fish Budget Oversight Committee meeting tonight, and it's from the Fisheries Subcommittee, that really has concerns about spending Game and Fish Fund dollars on these programs. And that has always been the DNR's concern, is spending Game and Fish Fund dollars on a program that is more of a social welfare program than a Game and Fish Fund program. It is a laudable project. They do great work. They spend most of their time taking seniors out fishing from nursing homes and their grandchildren, which is a great thing to do. But our concern is that if the money and time of scarce resources are spent appropriately and wisely, they're done so at a competitive manner, and that we don't use Game of Fish Fund dollars, rather we identify perhaps some dollars in a different part of the budget or general fund dollars. So that's where the DNR's concerns come, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion then on the amendments or questions, well, Mr. Meyer?
Just one quick thing. If we're taking people fishing and we're taking money from the Game and Fish, isn't that kind of pretty closely related?
Meyer.
I mean, I don't think that's welfare.
That, Mr. Chair, for that point.
Mr. Chair, members, if you turn to that the page that says preliminary draft April 09, the last page of this document, on the bottom of that says page 3, is where the committee discusses it. It says, we strongly believe the efforts at recruiting new and retaining old anglers are a justified expense of the Game and Fish Fund. But these efforts need to show success at revenue generation. If we are spending money that does not generate more dollars to the fund than are being spent, we believe we would be wasting dollars that would be better spent on improving the fisheries resource. We absolutely refuse to support efforts to make the Game and Fish Fund a social welfare fund. We believe that funding Let's Go Fishing would be an unwarranted diversion of funds, and again ask the DNR and legislature to prevent this. This is a citizens group that the legislature actually established many years ago that oversees the Game and Fish Fund, and this is their recommendation. So, Representative Solberg, to your point, they're taking them fishing, but there is no large recruitment effort that's involved. Last year, they documented 9,000 approximate visits that were out there. In the Policy Committee and Finance Committee, the question was asked them how much that came to per visit. It was roughly, if you did the math, $40-something dollars per person that they took fishing. But we want to recruit people into the sport of fishing, and our efforts are increasing new membership into the fishing programs of the state, and it doesn't show a lot of growth potential.
Well, just a couple of comments. First of all, again, Mr. Meyer, I've asked you repeatedly, figure out a funding source for it. But you refuse to work with us on it, you and the department. We've asked you over and over and over again. I'm happy to take it out of general fund or anywhere else, but you refuse to work with us. Number two, I think it's a better recruiting thing than your MinAqua program that uses these funds. My God, you got a billboard in Wilmer that says buy a fishing license. I'm going to go fishing, I'm going to buy a fishing license. That's what you're spending your Game and Fish money on. I think you just sent out 90,000 mailers asking people to go buy a fishing license. Of course you're going to buy a fishing license if you go. These people are actually recruiting people, setting up chapters, getting people on the water who buy fishing licenses with their families and their kids. And by the way, studies show to take a kid fishing, which you also run, and it's a good program out of your MinAqua program, which is very similar. Taking a kid fishing once doesn't mean they'll go fishing the rest of their life. But taking a kid fishing many times with grandma and grandpa or others who are in a wheelchair
it brings a lasting memory, and they probably will fish more. I think this is more effective than your Minocqua program that you fund out of your division right now. So if you want to get into the Minocqua program and what's going on over there and how many SPEs are involved there and how much money is spent and how much mileage is taken in, you know, you can't compare, here's what it costs per fishing trip. What's it cost per pound of walleye when I go fishing? I mean, my God, if we start figuring out the cost of fishing that way.
From what I heard.
So, I mean, Mr. Myers, I want to work with you, and I know the department is never, you know, but this is a successful program, a growing program, a good program. You admit it. Your financial report, again, says, we conclude an audit of financial activities would not be required at this time. I mean, you could come in and look at my checkbook. I don't balance my checkbook. I get a bad audit, I'm sure. I mean, every organization needs help, not scolding, but then help them. I mean, that's what really bothers me about all the departments here. We're getting so punitive in this place, but it's just bang, 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 you're doing stuff wrong, get out of my face. Instead of saying, can we help? Let us show you how. Let us assist you. Let us put you on our website. Let us utilize our expertise in Minocqua and other places to help you out. This is a wonderful program. Why can't you assist rather than bang, bang, bang all the time? And we're a couple years from having this thing self-sufficient. And members, please, I mean, this is an AARP-supported program. Half the members of this body got their name on these bills. Please support me.
Mr. Chair, just real briefly, and Representative Junkie, you will remember that I did drive down your district to meet with Let's Go Fishing and talk about opportunities or how to fund this program coming in the future, because I was concerned that there were no dollars for this appropriation this biennium. We talked about a grants program. We reevaluated doing a competitive grants program within the department, but there were no general fund dollars to do that. So I have been working, the department has been working with this organization to try to figure out alternative methods. And Representative Junkie's bill did contain $50,000 from the Veterans Affairs Department for each year for an appropriation as well, but that did not make it in his own Ag and Veterans Affairs bill. Our main concern all along, Mr. Chair members, is using Game and Fish Fund dollars for these programs, and a lot of it comes from the direction that we received from our oversight committees and their concerns about it as well. So we are more than happy to continue work with Representative Junkie and the organization. It's just a matter of identifying the appropriate source of funding, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Junkie, being unfamiliar with this area of the budget, how is the Game and Fish Fund funded?
Mr. Chair, it comes from fees paid on licenses and federal money that comes down, both, so I understand it from the time I spent on the Environment Finance Committee.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Junkie. Can you let me know, is there a surplus in there in this fund, or are we raising fees? Is there a proposal to raise fees this biennium?
Mr. Chair and Representative Biskins, yes, this bill raises $2.5 million, and that's conservative. It may be $5 million if we get a 40%. This bill assumes 20% of people will buy a two-line fishing stamp. At $10, that raises $2.5 million. If we're off, if we're conservative, I think we are, could be double that. So, yes.
Thank you,
Mr. President Ackbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one more question for Commissioner Meyer. How long has Flexbed Fishing been around?
Meyer. Mr. Chair, members, I'm familiar with it since the, I believe, 2004 session. I'm not sure if they, I believe they were an organization before then. They received state funding since 2004.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Junkie, that's my concern. It has been around for a while, and for you to say that two more years and we'll get the thing up and running, I'm a little bit concerned about that. I thought it would be up and running better than this by now.
Okay. Seeing no more discussion, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair.
Now we're to you.
Which one?
The one I've got on top is 510.
510, Mr. Chair and members. Do you recall the off-highway vehicle park that occurred, the ATVs, off-highway motorcycles, and four-wheelers and Gilbert, this language that we're amending comes from there, the original setting up of that state recreation area. And now They're going to move it to another old mining site. The land is owned by the city of Virginia. And what this does is this allows them to also lease land for the OHV area, Iron Range Off-Highway Vehicle area. And also to, instead of paying the lease over 10 years, maybe to just to pay it up front and get it out of the way. And I don't think the DNR has any opposition to this.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Rukavina?
Mr. Chair,
I
this
forgot
one
the last one to ask the author what his thoughts were. Were you supportive?
I would have gotten in on the conversation if I wasn't, thought I was. We didn't do it.
Didn't mean to overlook you. I'm just going to move on.
I was shaking my head, Mr. Chair.
I made an assumption there, but okay, Representative Rukavina.
Chair, as I was answering a constituent on the tax bill the other day, I tried to divert his attention to something else in an email as he was chewing on me. So I said, hey, Bricky, how's the access going that you called me on 2 years ago? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, it still isn't done yet. And I said, what? And members, I have a letter here to Mr. Mike Magnuson at the Department of Natural Resources in Tower, Minnesota, dated June 15th, 2001. When they tried to get access, a number of residences, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, actually 10. And they've been working on this since June 15, 2001, and this just says, get it done by July of this, the end of July of this year. I think it's gone on long enough, and so I appreciate your support. The author ran away on me, but I think he supports it. Or did he fall behind the...
any discussion? He was afraid I was going to ask him whether he heard it or not.
You can't leave the room,
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, it's that time of year where Representative Rukavina starts getting his legislative agenda passed through the Finance Committee. So I'd like to have a little bit of discussion about this amendment, if possible, and give you a little bit of background of the actual easement discussion that is taking place. With that, I have our Director of Lands and Minerals, Marty Vadas, here, just to brief the committee on the issue.
Mr. Vadas.
Mr. Chair, members, Marty Vadas, Director of DNR Lands and Minerals, and just briefly, the parcels that will be crossed by this road are school trust fund land. There are seven of them. As state law prevents DNR from issuing an easement directly to individuals on school trust land, so it has to go through a local unit of government. And in 2004, Reading Township did apply for an easement across this land, and we have been working since then with Reading Township. But to give you some idea, this is about a 1.5 mile crossing of school trust land, and there needed to be wetland delineation. Reading Township needed to form a road association, because there are about a dozen private landowners that would eventually benefit from this road being installed. The department's in favor of establishing this road access through Reading Township, but you should know the Department Division of Forestry has also been very interested in working with two of the private landowners at the end of this road to get easement access to some additional school trust fund land, about a half section of land, so that land could generate revenue through timber cutting. And with that, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions if there are any.
Yeah, are there any questions, Ms. Vance?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Mr. Vadas, do we have any other roads like this through school trust land?
Mr. Vadas or
Vadas? Vadas,
I'm sorry.
Vadas. Excuse me, I think I mispronounced it for something. Mr. Vadas.
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, the answer is yes. There are other examples where local units of government have taken over the responsibility of the easement and allowed private individuals to use that.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So Mr. Davis, so I'm just wondering, these are the kind of things that I agree with Representative Biskins on about having them in committees like this rather than the committees of jurisdiction so that they can get a handle on them. But when I heard school trust land, that's when I perked up my ears. I'm just wondering, Representative Rukavina makes the case that he's been waiting 8 years and it hasn't been done, and what is your side of that story?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bradley, I don't claim that this is a stellar example of speed and efficiency in issuing a road easement, but there are a number of complications here. And one the department's been very interested in is including that provision to get access over the private owner's land, to get access to the school trust land so that land can generate revenue. And that's been part of the discussion here. And like I mentioned, the department has the support of issuing this easement for the private landowners, but we'd also like to get access to that school trust land.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Granley, were you done?
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Vedas, I guess I'm so with what Representative Rukavina is doing get in the way of the school trust lands making money for the students?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, I think if this passes and the direction is given to the department to issue this road easement, it would be perhaps very difficult to get agreement from that private landowner to get access to that school trust land.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would urge us to not be too hasty, just pass another Representative Rukavina amendment on the fly. If that's the case, I think this should be carefully looked at in the Committee of Jurisdiction. And I wish Representative Rukavina, when it comes to school trust lands and raising money for the students, that you would introduce a real bill and not do this kind of thing at the end of session with an amendment that could impact, you know, we need every little dollar we can get for the students right now.
Mr. Chair, Representative Grimey, I have been working on school trust land for 23 years, and a lot of people at this table haven't listened to me for 23 years. You know, there was a time when the Department of Natural Resources, from 1981 to 1992, was selling $3 to $4 million worth of timber on school trust land and keeping it all, every single penny, for administrative purposes. I told people, including you, Mr. Chair, and everybody just looks the other way because the Education Committee doesn't run the school trust land, the Environment Committee does. We told you a couple of years ago about that mineral thing. You know, this is a little road. And members, I'm going to pass this map around to show you what Mr. Vedas is talking about, because here is the road that already goes in to Bass Lake, members, and I'm showing Representative Riley. This is private land. This is all state school trust land. You can see these roads going through state school trust land. But they wanted this little piece, two pieces of private land here, 40s, they want to get back into their property, which they can do coming in any other way. There are roads already, Representative Grimey. They can log this whole area if they want. But now that these people have decided that they'll pay to fill the road and put it in there, and then pay the DNR for a lease to build the road and put it in there, they want to put another new caveat after 2001 that, wait a minute, before we finally cut the deal, finally, you give us easement too. They got easement. They own all the property. They don't need any easement. They can put a road in off of any of these other roads. But what they're trying to do is say, well, you build the road, you take all the expense, we'll give you an easement, we're going to charge you again, which I don't know how much they'll charge the school trust fund for that. And then, by the way, after you build the road, let us bring these logging trucks on there. They'll tear the hell out of it. We won't do anything. We'll run it off on the county or Brighton Township. That's what's going on here. So this just came to my attention on, when did we vote on the Saturday night, this conversation with this gentleman took place, because like I said, I was trying to divert attention, you know. And I asked them, how about the road? Because 2 years ago he asked me and called me and asked me to help with this road, these people. And then they backed off and said, no, we don't want to get the DNR mad at us. They said everything's moving fine. It'll be done. 2 years ago. And now these two little yellow lines across these two private 40s are the holdup. And if we don't do this today, members, it'll take another 2 to 3 years. And that's the problem. But Representative Grinning, you know in your heart that nobody has fought to protect the school trust land more than me. I am not nicking the kids here. The DNR has been doing that for you. They do a much better job with me than me on that area. So members, I'd appreciate your support, and I'll pass the map on because all the S's are state land and there's rules.
Hey, Representative Colbert.
No, keep handling this off.
you're passing?
Yeah.
Representative Colbert?
Yeah, pass. Passing.
We have Representative Garofalo. By somewhere.
Mr. There's Chairman, I believe the Chairman of the K-12 Committee wanted to respond to Representative Rukavina. I'd like to yield to
Representative Grayling. I had her on the list, but I was just taking people in order. The hands went up. Representative Grayling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Representative Rukavina, as you know, Representative Dietrich and Representative Garofalo and others have been taking your advice, and we have been working on the school trust lands. We passed some legislation last year. We hope to pass some more next year that Representative Dietrich had this year that we couldn't get passed, but we hope you will help us with it next year. But the fact remains, though, that you have a bill that if any other person in this room, or almost any other one, certainly myself, had, we would introduce a real bill, take our chances. I've had a bill that was similar to this that I had to work on with Representative Solberg and Representative Hillstrom, and Senator Scheid and I had to, I think it took us like 2 years, even with the help of Representative Solberg, to get it done. And it was just something with a dock or something in a local community. But it never occurred to me to come up 3 weeks before the end of session in a committee like this and think that I could get it passed. And I know you're a special individual, and we all like that about you very much. But I just think something like this that seems to involve the school trust plan, we should call a halt to at least one Rukavina amendment, and I urge members to vote no on this amendment.
Well, Matt, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative Grinning, read the date of the email. I just found out about it because 2 years ago I wanted to help, and I was told back off, the DNR is going to take care of it. And I'm not going to apologize for trying to help my constituents. That's why we're here. What I'm doing is not nebulous or evil or anything else, or does not harm the school trust. What it does is jacks these people up to do their job. And Representative Grayling, if you had constituents that couldn't get to their property and were working with the DNR, as I told Representative Conn a couple weeks ago in this committee, you'd be doing it for almost now, 8 years, you'd be doing the same thing. You know that. You're not even denying it. Look at you.
No. Okay, I'm denying it.
You're not even denying it. You know,
Representative Hackworth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Rukavina, I don't know when we first passed that legislation to put in the Virginia site as off-road vehicle park. We did the Gilbert site, and then we came back. I think it was 1998. And then we've been trying to make those connections and everything ever since then. I think we've passed like three different bills. The money's been appropriated. Representative Grayling, this has been talked about many, many times, over and over and over again.
We passed that one, Tom.
That was last year's
last bill. Let's have the side conversation, I think, so people can hear.
That was a different amendment?
But Mr. Chair, Representative Hackworth, same exact principle.
Okay, did you still want to comment? You yielded.
Yeah,
we'll give you a chance if you.
I didn't want to go to the back of the line. Someone cut in front of me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess, I'm reading between the lines, or maybe not reading between the lines that much. It seems like the DNR is just using this as leverage. They're not granting the easement so they can get what they want from the property owners. And I certainly sympathize with the comments that Representative Grayling has made in the spirit of Representative Diskins. I don't, this is a finance committee. We shouldn't be doing policy stuff. But I got to tell you, the longer I'm here at the legislature, the more I start finding out about this stuff, it just scares the hell out of me. Seriously, I mean, if I own this property, I'm offering to pay for it, and now I'm getting told by the negotiator on the other side of the table, if I'm hearing this right, who's got all the cards, who's got all the money, and has got all the power to negotiate with me. And I got to tell you, I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. So I don't know how I'm going to vote on this, but it seems like if if we don't adopt the Representative Rukavina's motion, I don't know what the check is in this checks and balances system.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Kamar, we've got two amendments here by you, and one of them you're withdrawing. I think that's the A21. They were distributed in the packet. That was an earlier version that you're now substituting for the earlier version, the A22. Is that correct?
The A22, Mr. Chair, and I do have a couple of oral amendments, real quick, if I may.
Okay.
I believe in talking to Ms. Novak that it actually be on line 1.2, it should be page 22, and after line, delete 31 and insert 12.
Okay. Anything else?
Yes, on line 113, after the word 2, comma, and the primary purpose of which is 2. Insert, and the primary purpose of which is 2, and then it facilitates in whole or in part the purchase.
Is that it?
That's it.
Does everybody have the amendment? And then Novak, you've got it? Okay. So you'll incorporate that into the amendment. So the motion is before us. Now we've had a couple of handouts that either came around or did. One is, two of them are by Representative Kamar, and the other was a request by Representative Smith. I think Kamar had his name on his, but the other one without a name is Representative Smith. I understand it.
Mr. Chairman, that's right. They were pre-copied.
Just a couple. No. Okay. The motion is before us. Any discussion, Representative Kamar? Do you want to explain your amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'll be brief. We've had a long day, and it's already late, 7:30. But I just amendment keeps dangerous weapons out of the hands of dangerous people by closing the current gun show loophole. This loophole basically allows any kind of weapon and any number of firearms at a gun show without undergoing a background check. And the dangerous people that the background check is designed to uncover are felons, are individuals convicted of domestic assault, and those with serious mental health problems. This provision is supported by the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association, and background checks in general, members, for gun sales are supported by 82% of Minnesotans. Now, I know that there's going to be some question or objections of why this bill, why this amendment is here today, and the reason why it is, and I've had a conversation with Representative Dill about it, but the reality was is that I introduced this bill, and some people objected to some of the provisions in my original bill, like some of the private sales sections. So we took that out, we stripped it out, we made it very bare. We were specifically dealing with gun shows here, so that's the amendment. So what it does is it just says that no person shall transfer a firearm at a gun show without conducting a background check on the person who is purchasing the firearm. And it also defines what a gun show is, and it also specifies that the gun show promoter shall arrange for services of one or more licensed gun dealers on the premises of the gun show to obtain the background checks required by this section. Now, I just wanted to say is that this amendment and the bill is patterned after a statute in Colorado. After the Columbine massacre, and you might be interested to note that those guns that killed those students at Littleton, Colorado, were purchased at a gun show. This statute was adopted in Colorado. It works well. And 18 other states have closed this loophole. And I just need to say that background checks
have blocked 1.6 million purchases from people who should not possess them. And so I would hope that you would adopt the amendment. I think that it's well thought out, I think, and I think it would save lives in the state of Minnesota.
Okay, motion is before us. Representative Bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And my first thought is as I was listening to the committee do its work about what Representative Dreiling said about Representative Rukavina's amendment, and that it would really be nice if a bill were like this, especially a controversial provision like this. Not that Representative Rukavina's provision was that terribly controversial, but certainly this is. And that there would be a bill introduced, and that it would have a hearing, and that it would go through public safety. And it would go through the appropriate committees, for that matter, before it gets here and then gets added into a bill that has to do with game and fish laws or land provisions or something to do with timber. And I'm certainly going to tell you that I do not want this on my bill, because it takes my bill from being a rather mild bill, not controversial, because it's passed out of every single committee except for the amendments that were today, and I think every one of them today in this committee have passed on a voice vote as well. It is passed on a voice vote in every single committee. And I don't want it on my bill. There are places for this. Representative Paymire had an opportunity on numerous instances to put some kind of iteration of this amendment in places where he serves, which one of which is the Public Safety Committee. And I'll have to tell you a little background on this, is that when my bill was in the Public Safety Committee, meaning House File 1238, I could not get the bill out of Representative Hillstrom's committee until I took a provision that I absolutely do not like. But I took it because I wanted to progress the bill. And at that time, Representative Paymire asked the chair, "Are amendments in order, Madam Chairman?" And she said, "Yes, they are." And after 30 seconds of nobody offering any amendments, of which Representative Paymire is on the committee and asked that question, the bill passed out on a voice vote. So now what we're going to do is, if this amendment becomes on the bill, it will become hugely controversial. It will consume considerable hours of discussion and debate on the House floor on a bill that should pass with an overwhelming majority as it stands prior to this amendment. And secondly, as I thought earlier, that we discussed Section C, which begins on 111, and let Representative Paymire can explain to me more. It says a gun show is defined as the entire premises at an event or function open to the public, including but not limited to parking areas, that is sponsored to facilitate in whole or part the purchase or sale of a collection of firearms or 20 more. The way I read that is that a woman whose husband dies and he has a gun collection, she wants to sell the guns out of her garage, that would be considered an event or function open to the public, because she certainly has to put some flyers up inviting the public to come and see these firearms. It would include her parking areas for the event or function, and that she would be the sponsor then. So under this, if she had 20 or more guns, she would be required to get a licensed firearm dealer to come to that site. The guns would have to be transferred to the firearms dealer and then transpired under a background check to the individuals that purchased them. This is not the time nor place to take on this amendment on the game and fish bill. And I could go on, but I'd like for Representative Cornish, if the chair would give me the latitude to come up, and he is more of an expert on the technicalities of these types of amendments. And if the chair would grant me that latitude, I'd like for Representative Cornish to come up and give a very brief explanation of why this is not the proper language that we need.
I think you're hearing from the committee that
you didn't want to give me the latitude to do that. I'm fine with that, Mr. Chair.
Well, you heard the committee.
Yes, I'm fine. Go ahead.
Okay, any discussion, Representative Biskin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Representative Chair Paymire, you know, I do believe that you had ample opportunity to bring this through your committee. Otherwise, you know, I think bring it to the entire floor. Let's have the debate amongst all 134 members of the committee, of the body. I don't think this is an appropriate committee, and Mr. Chair, I ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested.
Representative Grapple.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. Representative Paymar, I know I don't question your motives in this, but I just want to let you know that felons... No, I'm not questioning his motives. I don't. Representative Paymar, felons don't buy guns. They steal them. And there's already laws against that.
Representative Grapple, I don't know if that's a true statement or not. I think both happens. I mean, we have plenty of evidence, and I think we just had the example of what happened at Columbine, where the folks who committed murder bought the guns, and they became felons, you know. And so, at any rate, I guess, Mr. Chairman, one of the questions I had a question related to this. Is a document on our desk that has nobody's name on it? We usually don't allow just the anonymous.
I announced when it was distributed that was because there wasn't a name. It was the request of your teammate there, Representative Smith.
I must have missed that. So this is
I did announce that who had.
Mr. Chairman, did you thank you? He did bring it up,
I did admit
that a member of the audience had given it to me. They were pre-printed, so I did not want to sign by hand all of them, but I did have it. Asked to be passed out.
Okay.
Yeah, but we did identify the person.
I just want to say that I do understand that what's being done here is to fill a loophole, and I process society, and we have had all kinds of things today and in this committee. I guess I just really think the kind of loopholes that if we have problems with people who want to sell family weapons, we could take care of that. But I think the loopholes that are happening at the gun shows are serious ones, and that those are the kinds of things that we should be taking care of. And so I appreciate that this is before us.
Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Tamar, while I don't support your amendment, I guess I want to join in and wish that you had brought this either to Chair Hillstrom's committee or at a minimum to your committee. I'm not sure if there's a fiscal, if there's any fiscal implication with the language on line 1.16, creating a gross misdemeanor, which is going to entitle individuals charged who may not otherwise have resources to the use of a public defender. But and as you know, Chair Paymar, there's costs associated with that. But I guess I'm as Representative Biskins said earlier. He kind of teed it up, Representative Paymar. You know, this isn't the place to be bringing these types of substantive policy amendments. We shouldn't be doing them in the Finance Committee. You serve on both the Public Safety Committees along with me, and that's where we should have these discussions, at least initially. And I guess it's unfortunate that we're not having that. We're not going to have an opportunity to fully air and vet this issue, and I wish that we were. I'm going to urge members to vote no. Regardless of your thought on the policy here, I think that the fact that we're dealing with not only a controversial but a substantive policy issue here in the Finance Committee is inappropriate.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar.
I just want to respond. I mean, I think those are legitimate issues. But, you know, in this committee, I've sat on the Finance Committee for years. I've seen members bring up substantive amendments, delete portions of the finance bill, whole sections out. Lots of policy has been debated and voted on in this committee. So to say that is a little bit of a stretch, given the history of the way this committee has operated. And that's nothing to represent Carlson, but that's just the way it's been open-ended. And quite frankly, Representative Hillstrom was reluctant to hear the bill as it was originally introduced, and I scaled it down to where I think it's acceptable. It's very clear cut. It only deals with gun shows. This is a statute that has worked perfectly well in Colorado. And to think that, you know, the thousands of guns that get trafficked, you might say that criminals still have, you know, I have no illusions about this. Criminals are just still going to get guns. But if we can stop individuals, 1.6 million people have been stopped by the Brady Amendment, by the Brady Safety Bill, from getting access to handguns, to assault weapons. I mean, how many massacres do we need in this country? whether it's the school shootings, whether it's the shootings that just happened in Pittsburgh and Oakland where police officers were killed. You know, I'm not saying that this is going to keep the guns out of all criminals, but it's an important first step. 8 other states have done it. I think Minnesota needs this law.
Representative Champion.
You know, I am a a newcomer here, but I am very disappointed right now. I'm very disappointed as I sit and listen to the conversation around the table, as I sit and think about the number of stories that we've heard on television dealing with firearms and guns, how I think it's important for us to balance the safety of our public and the safety of family and children, and balance that with folks' right to bear arms if they want to bear arms. But I think it appears to me to be hypocritical when we now think in terms of something that requires us to balance some real interest here. And to think about the impact of what we are about to do as opposed to our political aspirations. Now, of course, some of you will probably say, I am one who don't know very much because I'm a newcomer. But yet and still, I'm looking for the more seasoned one to lead. And to allow others like me to follow. And how can you lead? One, by balancing important public policy. What is important here? Safety. I've heard, individuals say, felons don't buy guns. They steal them. Well, we also know that you don't have to be a felon to unfortunately do something that you shouldn't do, which is something that we just talked about when we think in terms of Columbine and some of the other places. So I think that you have a right to bear arms, but I think we also have a responsibility to make sure that we close every loophole so that guns don't end up in the hands of the wrong people. And when I think in terms of the portion of the district that I serve, we see far too many young people dying. We see far too many guns in the hands of the wrong people. And we can all throw our hands up in the air and say, well, that's not my district. That's not me. Let those criminals do whatever they do. Let those communities do whatever they do to each other. Well, you know what? I think this is being responsible. And whether this is controversial or not, see, that's the other thing that I find very challenging. We all talk about what's controversial. You know what? There's a lot of things controversial. But it doesn't mean that we don't lead and that we shouldn't lead. And it may mean that your bill is argued far longer on the floor than what you would like for it to be argued. I know I've been sitting on the floor until 1 o'clock in the morning and 12 o'clock in the morning around issues that I wouldn't think they would be controversial. But we found ways to argue those points. And so for me to sit around the table amongst the most seasoned, yes, it's difficult. Yes, it requires us to balance many interests. But it requires us that sort of insightfulness. And someone is probably going to say, well, that's why you take it through the vetting process. Well, this process allows for different things to happen. Why do we conveniently use that statement when it's to our advantage? How about the fact that it's here? We need to deal with it. Too many young people are dying. Guns are falling into the hands of wrong folks. And I agree with Representative Paymar. He's absolutely right. This doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to delete every violent act around, but we can do our part. And I'm prepared to do my part. So the question is, are you prepared to do yours?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think it is okay to discuss this stuff, and I agree with everyone who said that so far. And one thing that bothers me, though, is we keep talking about Columbine. And, you know, don't do that. Let's have a thoughtful debate without bringing up the emotional stuff, because I think you're right, Representative Champion. We should talk about things on their issues. Those kids at Columbine didn't buy their guns at a gun show because they're kids. Their parents bought them, and they stole them from them. You can't sell guns to kids. So, you know, don't say that they bought their guns at a gun show. Their parents did. And members, there are a percentage of gun show weapons that are sold that are used in violent crime. 1% is the best estimate we have. So there, we can prevent 1%, perhaps. But again, not if parents buy it and the kids steal it or the neighbor steals it or you know, get taken out of your car. So again, be careful with those things and let's not rise this to the level of that type of emotion. And I do understand what we're going through. And I've told this story before. You know, I grew up in rural Minnesota, in Wells, Minnesota, where Representative Cornish represents. We hold a gun show since I was born in the Wells school. Some of you would be appalled at that. No, they still do it. It was this year, too, wasn't Representative Cornish. They do it every year. It's in the gym. It's up and down the halls. It's in the lunchroom. That's where they set up their tables. So, I mean, we grow up with different attitudes on guns. If I lived in your neighborhood, Representative Champion, I'd vote for every one of these. Every single one of them. But, you know, the neighborhood I grew up in, I used to bring my gun to school when I was done duck hunting in the morning because I didn't want someone to steal it out of my unlocked car. I brought it into the school and put it in my locker where it was safer. That's how I grew up. You got to realize with these things, it's just a different attitude. And thankfully, I've lived in both places. I live here in St. Paul, downtown, with my roommate, and I get it. I get your attitudes on guns. I understand it perfectly. But we do have to be rational. I really, truly believe that this will not prevent anything. As Representative Dill said, you can buy guns in the paper. You can buy them from your neighbor. You can buy them anywhere else. And closing this loophole and shutting down, frankly, making it more difficult for legitimate gun shows that have been there forever in rural Minnesota. And I invite you to come out and go to some of the members if you've never been to see the activity and what goes on again in Wells High School, Wells Easton, where I grew up, and a lot of bonding people are there. Alice, you were there with us. That's where the gun show is, up and down those halls. There's just not harm being done by this. And I really rationally think that this is not the right amendment to prevent crime and those types of things. It's just going to put a wrench in the works and not really prevent anything. So, members, respectfully, and not emotionally, I ask you to vote against this.
Representative Brock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Dunkey, I appreciate your perspective. It's a perspective that I grew up with as well. In fact, I just went to an Eagle Scout ceremony in which the Isaac Walton League brought forward to the four new Eagle badge awardees their guns that they were awarded for their efforts as an Eagle Scout, and it's something that they've been doing for years and years and years. Representative Champion, I agree with you. I think controversy is a good thing. It allows us to vet. It allows us to discuss. It allows us to do what we were sent here to do, which is debate the issues. But we do have a process, too, and I think we have to balance those things in a very careful way. When you start to sidestep the process in a way that dilutes that same process, I think you got to be careful, and we see that in many different areas. But I think about the specifics of what this is trying to do, and Representative Tamer, I know you are passionate about this, and I appreciate that, but it just seems to me that when you look at the fact that there's already thousands and thousands and thousands of gun laws out there, oftentimes it seems to me we make laws for the law abiders because the other folks are going to get around them anyway. And that's a concern of mine, is that you start hamstringing those who are already abiding by the law. And I think about these licensed dealers, these federally licensed firearm dealers. When they are transacting and they're dealing, they're under federal law already. They're not allowed to, or it triggers all sorts of background checks and things like that, from my understanding. So I'm not sure what the specific loophole that is trying to be created actually is, because I think they're covered. And maybe, Mr. Chairman, maybe that's what Representative Seymour can help me with, because background checks are triggered when they are dealing. And it seems to me that a facilitation is a deal.
Mr. Chair? I know you want to move on here, too, so maybe I'll just answer Representative Broad and then close my remarks. The fact of the matter...
We have three other people that want to.
But I won't close my remarks.
Just to give you a heads up, if you want to be the last word being...
I do. Well, I just wanted to... I'll just respond to the question, then. The majority of people who sell firearms at a gun show are federally licensed firearm dealers. That's not the problem. They are required by federal law. If I go in there and want to purchase an Uzi or a pistol or whatever, they are required by law
I would have to get a background check. So they call up the FBI, they do a quick NICS check, it takes 3 minutes, they can find out whether I'm a felon, whether I've been convicted of a domestic assault before, or been institutionalized in some way with severe mental health problems. These are the kinds of people we don't want to have that should not be possessing guns. So licensed firearm dealers do this. It's the ones who don't. We're saying you have to, if you could still sell your weapon, but the person would have to get a background check. That's all it does. It's simple. And in Colorado, they were able to it did not become problematic for the dealers because they simply have someone at the gun show. They charge $10 to get the background check. So if there's any cost associated with it, the private person could do it. It has not been a problem in Colorado. I don't know why people should not have a background check who can go into a gun show and purchase a semi-automatic weapon or any weapon for that matter. So that's the answer to your question. I do have a couple closing statements whenever you're ready, Representative Sheriff.
Okay.
Representative Raffel? Representative Simon?
Well, I just want to say, Representative Tamar, I know you're passionate about this too. This is an issue that I, especially in the last year or so, I'll be honest with you, I've struggled with. And the thing that really has made me think about this in a new way is the Supreme Court decision that came down last year, the Heller case, where for the first time, amazingly, in 230 years, Supreme Court finally announced that gun ownership is an individual right. Doesn't belong to a militia. It's an individual right, every bit as important as the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, all the others in the Bill of Rights. And that has me, I'll be honest, rethinking some things, because I know that life would be a lot more convenient without the Fourth Amendment. We'd catch a lot more criminals if the cops could bust down every door without a reason. But there's some of us, me included, who say, no, that's an individual right. And although it's inconvenient and messy, and sometimes people get upset because we don't catch as many bad guys, the government has to have a reason, a good reason, to bust down a door. And so, you know, the Heller decision made clear what was up in the air for a long, long time. That's an individual right. And that's and what I'm getting at is, I guess the way I think about these issues now, which I didn't always, is that we've got to have a good reason before we do a lot of things in this area, and I just don't know whether this is that good reason or not. The statistics make a lot of sense to me, but I know I would benefit from testimony on a bill like this. I was just jotting down questions as others who are a lot more knowledgeable than I am were talking about this bill. I don't have the technical expertise either. I have a lot of questions. I won't bore the committee with my questions at this point, but I do have a lot of them. And I just want to say that by way of explanation. I have a lot of questions about this, and it may make a lot of sense. What you say does sound like it's a pretty simple bill. It doesn't sound that complicated to me, but I'd want to know a lot more about what the Colorado experience has been. I'd want to know a lot more about individual gun sales. I'd want to know a lot more about the straw man issue and things like that. But so it's something I wrestle with, and I just I'm worried procedurally here about where it is in the process, because I have questions that we can't really answer, I don't think, today, because we don't have testimony.
The only thing I was going to comment to is, my father is a very interesting one, is because he likes to hunt, fish, he does it all. My dad is 79, and there's no grass that grows under his feet. All I'm saying is that I understand that there are ways that we have grown up, Representative Junkie, and those experiences shape us. You also talked about you had the experience of being here in the inner city, for an example, or the city. And there is another set of realities. So as we begin to have these world experiences and these world views, all I'm asking is that as we wrestle with these issues, that we consider those things. I heard Representative Simon talking about individual rights and how he's struggling with that, and I think that's an important struggle. But I don't care if you compare it to the First Amendment,
anything else, even though you may have a right to say whatever you want to, there's some things you still can't say. That's based on the law. And so, with that, I'm just suggesting that we are not sidetracking or sidestepping the process. It's an important issue. Even on the House floor, in the short period of time that I've been here, we've heard new things that have come up every single year without there being a bill. And I think that this is a matter of safety. How do we make sure that we allow for those who really want to bear arms, but also protect? And even if it's 1% or 10%, the fact is that if we can save a life, if we can do something that's worthwhile, then it was the right thing to do. That's what I believe, and I hope that you would support this amendment.
Members, Representative Tamar, I'll make his closing comments. But I'll tell you one thing I'm not real comfortable with, and that's that we've had a long tradition. I heard the groans, but when a member of the House has wanted to comment, we've allowed them to do that. And if Representative Cornish, you heard the committee's reaction, I think they just simply wanted to vote. But if you could make just a one-minute comment as a courtesy to a fellow House member, I'd like to do that.
Mr. Chair, members, real quickly.
I'm a former member of the committee, by the way.
I think that the motion or the amendment is out of order. First of all, I don't think that you can do this within the constraints of the Brady Law, which put this all into effect, this FFL transfers. There's no way you can accomplish that. We have an opinion from a couple of attorneys that you can't use the Brady Law to transfer weapons. It has to be between dealers. You go to a non-licensed person, you can't step in and substitute an FFL use for that in a NICS check. So I think that is clearly illegal. And then if you say about saving one life, is it worth it? That's an argument that's been used hundreds of times, and the basic answer is you could use that 100 different things. We could lower the speed limit to 30 miles an hour and save thousands of lives. The reason we don't do it is because it's not practical. And if you've taken away too many rights, the gun shows, like Representative Junkie said, have been going on for years. They're an honored tradition. And there's so many ways to get guns, unfortunately, that in my career, I can't remember any of the crimes ever committed in my whole career from a gun show. Mostly are stolen out of houses and burglaries. And so I think the onerous regulation that you would sit here and you would almost shut down gun shows. You go into Wells and there's just scores and scores of private dealers there. To put this in would just about close them out of all the transfers back and forth. There's not that many dealers to go around in these shows. So what you would gain from this is purely questionable for the onerous regulations that you would put on gun owners. And I really believe the two attorneys' opinions that I've seen that say that this is just plain illegal. You can't use a federal firearm in NICS check for private sales. It has to be between the dealers and the dealer to sale. There's no way you can transfer that back and forth. I guess that would be my comment.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Tamar, for your concluding comments, and then we'll vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I didn't want to say Representative Junkie. I just want to clarify something. I did not want to sensationalize the Columbine thing, but I do want to correct you. It wasn't the parents who's where the weapons came from. The Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris actually recruited a young 18-year-old woman to go to a gun show and buy the weapons. So it wasn't the parents. I just wanted to put that out there. I'm sure you wanted that clarification. Let me just say this final thing here. The Representative Simon, I support gun ownership. I support Second Amendment rights. I'm not trying to anything that will hurt personal protection or hunting. I want to also add that the Heller case supports background checks. I mean, it says it's an individual right, but it's not to possess weapons, constitutional right, but it's not unlimited. So all we're trying to do here is plug a loophole that 18 other states have done. And Representative Cornish, my colleague on the conference committee, I think you're just wrong about that, about what you just stated, because Colorado has successfully done that in terms of having another licensed firearm dealer could conduct a NICS check. So this is going to protect lives of members. I hope you would support it.
Clerk will take the roll.
Benson?
Aye.
Broad?
No.
Biskins?
No.
Champion?
Aye.
Clerk?
Yes.
Raffle?
No.
Greiling?
Yes.
Hackbar?
No.
Hausman?
Yes.
Hilty?
No.
House? Huntley? Junkie?
No.
Kahn?
Yes.
Giffmeyer? Smooth?
Yes.
Coles?
No.
Manchesky?
Yes.
Murphy? Tamar?
Yes.
Flowski? Pepin? Rukavina?
No.
Shemansky?
No.
Simon?
Pass.
Slavitt?
Yes.
Smith?
No.
Solberg?
No.
Carlson?
Yes.
What? Jason.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Let me clean again.
Motion carries with 12 ayes, 11 nays, and one abstention. Any more amendments to the bill?
So, Mr. Chair, I'd like to table the bill.
The author lays the bill over. We now have the
amendment to the land bill.
We have the next bill is House File 696.
Chairman?
Benson.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division report for House File 696 to the Second Committee in Grossman.
Motion is before any discussion. Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Benson?
Mr. Chairman, I move House File 696, the Second Committee in Grossman, to be recommended to pass and we refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
The motion is before us. We have an amendment by Representative Rukavina.
Chair, members, this amendment's already been discussed.
The author's request or part of it, or do you want to present the bill first? Representative Dill, on your behalf, or is that Rukavina amendment strictly? Why don't you present the bill, then, and we'll take the Rukavina amendment.
And this is a land bill that was obtained in the last bill, 1238, there were no questions on the bill except in Representative Rukavina's amendment. And that is my presentation.
Okay, Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, I have the same amendment last one for the easement for the 12 people that have been waiting 8 years.
Amendment, however.
I move the amendment. The 5.9 amendment.
Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. We now have the bill before us. Representative Benson renews his motion that. Representative Simon.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment, Representative Bill. Thanks for putting this bill together. And, you know, I have to say a word about my constituent, who you know. And members, this is an issue that I think affects, I suspect, a lot of you and your constituents as well. Representative Bill knows what I'm talking about, but I have a constituent named Jeff Carlson who for the last several years has been trying to get a portion of, not even the whole thing, but a portion of his land back. It was family land in his family for many decades. It was seized, in essence, in 1975 in order to be part of a DNR project. It's now the Spire Valley Hatchery. And he's made a pretty persuasive case to me, and I know to others, that he should be entitled, and his family should be entitled, to buy back, not a give back, but buy back at a market rate some of that land. And you were kind enough last year to give him and his bill, the bill we had on his behalf, a hearing, and I appreciate it, and believe me, he appreciates that. And the point I'm trying to get at here is, what I'm hearing is that very often when it comes to the land bill here, and this isn't just you, Representative Dale, it's other chairs, there's been this kind of circular reasoning in some sense of, well, we're only going to include stuff that the DNR says is okay in the bill. The problem with that is, when the DNR is wrong, if they're wrong, they're not going to acknowledge they're wrong, and it's never going to be in the bill. So if we ever want to get some relief to folks like my constituent, doesn't have to even be my constituent, I hope that in the future there will be some willingness to accept bills and provisions in there that don't necessarily have the DNR stamp of approval, particularly where the allegation is that the DNR itself has done wrong or is doing wrong by refusing to accept some sort of reasonable compromise, as my constituent has had the opportunity to put forth many times. So I just say that. I thought it was important to say on the record that I hope in the future that we can kind of loosen that rule. And you've been kind enough, Mr. Chair, as I say, to give him a full airing and a full hearing. But I really do hope that we're not held hostage to DNR. We've already heard earlier in this hearing tonight people who aren't too pleased with DNR. So we're willing to air those grievances, and I don't see why we shouldn't be willing to do so and tell DNR when we think they're wrong in the lands bill as well. So I hope in the future you'll be open to that, Mr. Chair.
Sure, I think Representative Simon is 100% correct. And Representative Simon, I've been reading those emails from Carlson for like 3 years now, and I think what happened to them is deplorable. And the lands bill has historically around here been one of the bills held up till the end that anybody with grievances against the DNR, it seems, makes an effort to, on the whole floor, argue their case. And I recommend to you that you do, because I think when people understand what's been going on there, it's outrageous. Really, it is. If there ever was a taking that I thought was unconstitutional, that case with the Carlson family is a good example. So I hope you pursue it.
We have the motion then before us as amended, that House File 696, the Second Committee Engrossment, be recommended passed as amended and re-referred to Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Bill now has 1132. Representative Benson.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Environment Natural Resources Finance Division report for House File 1132, the Second Committee Engrossment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Benson.
Mr. Chairman, I move House File 1132, the Second Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Bill.
In House File 1238, we discussed both provisions. One has to do with selling timber as appraised, and one about leasing lands under a pilot program, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the motion then is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. That concludes the business for tonight. We do have the bill referrals here, so make sure you watch those for the various divisions. We meet again tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. I think I announced this morning, but it's so long I'm not sure, but we have about 45 to 50 bills that we'll be taking up in the rest of this week and next week, and some of them are some very significant bills yet that are out there. The Heritage one, for example, LCCMR, to name a couple. So we've got a pretty busy agenda as we move forward. So with that, we need to turn.